Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, sounds good to me. I'm just coming back from an incredible night last night we had at Blue Wahoo Stadium, where I got to meet Mama B. Mama B was our guest yesterday for 2 hours, and she'll be, as far as I know, a regular on the show here. We have a lot of work to do. She brought on 3 guests by surprise yesterday. I had no idea. It was hysterical. And so we just had such an amazing time at a movie called The Awakening, which is about conservative Black folks who are disgusted with the Democrat Party, disgusted with the whole idea of us being a racist nation. It was a really interesting film to see, and just the amount of just the huge rise in Black conservatism, which is wonderful, because that is one of the keys to success for our country. Anyway, enough of that. I got a candidate here, and the first one brave enough to come on Action Radio and actually discuss the issues with enough time to do it. And let's bring on our guest of the day, Dr. now candidate Joel Rudman. So this is our first chat. We have not talked before, and so I've seen his videos. He's, as far as I know, a family doctor in Navarre, which is Florida's most relaxing place. So if you want to come relax, you go to Navarre. Anyway, he's here just to tell his story. This will not be his first appearance, I hope, as we have a primary coming up in August. So we've got lots of time to talk about this. So let's bring on Dr., as I said, now candidate Joel Rudman.
Good morning, Greg.
How you doing?
Hey, man. Boy, you hit it pretty early in the morning, don't you, Greg?
Well, I do, but actually we're thinking of changing the show to start at 7 o'clock. And I did it earlier because of the East Coast folks. But apparently we're not as popular in the East as we are in the Midwest and the West. And so we're getting more, especially Arizona. We have a lot of folks in Arizona and believe it or not, California. And so I want to work our way maybe more towards that. But early, you know, Tuesday could be flexible. So if you want to come back at 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday next time, you know, we'll worry about we'll do that. But yeah, well, now that you're up bright and early, let's hear your story. Who are you, and why are you running for the Florida House of Representatives?
Well, first of all, Greg, thanks for having me. I was kind of joking. Obviously, these are days where you get up at 5 a.m. when you run as a candidate, and you go to sleep about midnight. So I was actually up anyway. So I appreciate you having me on. But as far as who I am and what I'm doing here, so I'm a local family doctor. I mean, I'm your doctor down the street. I've been in Navarre for 17 years, you know, board certified the whole time since I left residency. So I was one of those doctors that's kind of apolitical, you know, happy to make my money, happy to punch in, punch out, you know, run my own business. And then COVID hit, Greg, you know, and it's as if we all didn't know that our freedoms were being eroded by the day. COVID just basically accelerated that process. I had to sit back as a family physician and use a medical excuse as a reason to take our freedoms and liberties away. And I wasn't going to stand for it, to be honest with you. I started speaking out. I started speaking out on Facebook. I started speaking out to my patients. You know, these mask mandates came out of nowhere, and I tried to educate patients on what masks were really for, and obviously they're not for stopping viral transmission. I mean, it's crazy.
Let's talk about that for a second. Why is it? Let's just focus on that right now so people know exactly what's going on. Why don't masks work from a medical perspective?
Well, and the funny thing is that people try to tell us doctors, Greg, why we wear masks. I don't think they understand when you're in the operating operating room, Greg. You know, this is going to be a great hour, Greg, because we're just going to lay it out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we're in the operating room wearing those thin little sterile masks, people don't understand. We've just come out of the doctor's lounge eating a plate full of meatloaf and macaroni and cheese. And so when we're opening someone's abdomen, right, when we've got their insides on the outside, we don't want to spit a piece of macaroni into their abdominal cavity. So that's why we wear masks, right? We wear masks.
I just want to apologize right now for anybody who's having breakfast.
Right.
Well, a little doctor humor
and
here.
And a good analogy, Greg.
Uh-huh.
A good analogy, Greg. I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan. Do you remember the Junior Mint episode?
Actually, it's one of the few shows I never watched because once I heard it was about nothing, I had nothing to do with it. I'm one of the few that actually missed Seinfeld. So enlighten me. What classic cultural gap is there in my education? What'd you get from Seinfeld?
So there was an episode on Seinfeld called The Junior Mint where basically Kramer and Jerry, they're watching a friend's surgery from up above. It's one of those big theater operating rooms like you have in medical school.
Uh-huh.
And Kramer's up there in the gallery eating Junior Mint, and one accidentally gets knocked out of his hand and it falls right into the abdominal cavity of a patient. So
oh no.
That's basically why we wear masks in the OR, right? To prevent a Junior Mint from falling out of our mouths into a patient. But it's not to stop the spread of hepatitis B. It's not to stop the spread of AIDS. It's not to stop the spread of coronavirus. It's for totally different reasons altogether. And so the masks were one thing that I just really, really took offense to. I said, this makes no medical sense. And then, of course, you had the vaccine mandates, Greg, which you and I both know. These things are all unconstitutional. Show me in the Constitution, show me in the Bill of Rights, show me, and for that matter, Greg, show me any Supreme Court decision that says that the federal government has the right to tell you what to put into your body or what to take in a medical crisis, or that they can suspend your rights because of a medical crisis. And of course, you and I both know there is no such statute. There is no such decision. As a matter of fact, Greg, that's one of the things that I tried to do here in Navarre as a private citizen. So last year when people were trying to tell me the Constitution and when people were trying to tell me what I should be doing as a doctor, I went to the local Navarre High School. I sponsored a constitutional essay contest. I gave a total of $1,600 to 10 patients, and I had them write on one essay question. The question was, are the vaccine mandates constitutional? And so that's what we did. We tried to educate the next generation because as they did their research, most of them discovered, hey, I went into this thinking that surely if the president says something, it must be lawful. But most of the students, they said, after I did my research, I found out differently. I found out that these things aren't constitutional. So,
well, that's interesting. I'm going to hold you up there because I don't want you to feel you have to rush to these topics because we have time, and whatever we don't cover this time, I'm probably going to have you on three or four more times before the primary in August. So we can go through this. This is fascinating. I would love to meet those students. I would love to, especially those that were surprised by what they learned, because that shows the lack of education. That shows, and not on their part, but on the part of the school and what the schools aren't teaching. And in fact, we got a caller here, Pianchi, one of our regulars, and he talks about this too. In fact, he came up with the phrase, the Constitution doesn't have an on and off switch. And so this is something we've talked about for years. I'll tell you my COVID history in just a little bit, but let's get Pianchi on. Pianchi, you're on with Dr. Joel Rubin, who's running for the Florida House of Representatives. Pianchi?
Good morning, Greg, and also to your guests. Well, that's a good place to start. But when is the teaching going to go out to young people that states give federal government the power that it has? And also the federal government has assigned powers to itself that really the states allow it. If not, they wouldn't do it.
Those are two big questions.
They should take back that power they've given to the federal government.
Yep.
You're exactly right. Exactly right. So it sounds like, Greg, it sounds like you have some listeners that are pretty informed on the Constitution. So that
you have no idea. We have a very special audience here. This is where we can get so specific. So you don't have to hold back. Like most shows, they want you to talk to at the 12-year-old level. No, not here. We're at the PhD level and then some. So feel free to let us know whatever's really on your mind in detail, so we can handle it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, education and state power. I want to focus on those. Especially, let's start with education. Now, I want to sort of direct it just a little bit in terms of education as a state representative. So take off the doctor coat and put on your nice tie. So now you're in the Florida State House, specifically on education with things Pianchi talked about. What can you do as a state representative?
Absolutely, Greg. I'd be happy to. Since we have a little time, Greg, I want to go back to what your caller mentioned. They're exactly right. For those of you who have only just kind of a glancing understanding of the Constitution, go back and read what the caller just referenced. They're exactly right. my two favorite amendments in the Bill of Rights are the Ninth and the Tenth Amendments. And the reason for that is the Ninth Amendment specifically says, and Greg, how smart is this, right? This is how smart our founding fathers were. These guys saw problems hundreds of years before they occurred. Our founding fathers put an amendment in the Constitution that said, hey, we've listed eight rights that people have. Just because we don't list other rights doesn't mean that they don't have other rights. These are the only eight we can think of right now. But if we didn't mention them in here, the people still retain the rights. Even though we haven't spelled them all out exclusively, they still retain these other rights. And then, of course, the 10th Amendment says, however, the only rights that the federal government has are specifically delineated in this document. You can't give the feds more rights than we've already listed. So how ingenious was that? I just want to make people aware of that.
Yeah, and I want to give you a hint on language. Whenever you talk about government, we always talk about powers because governments have no rights.
Right.
The only rights are retained by individuals, and all rights are individual. There are no group rights. There are no special rights. There are no rights to put one person above another. You can't do that. But just as a hint, I just want to make sure that because I'm going to support you already. I really like what you're saying, and we're not objective here. Okay, this is an advocacy show. So we take positions, and I don't – so if anybody's expecting objectivity, you're listening to the wrong place because you ain't going to find it. But just to give you a little help here, that powers.
Yeah.
Governments exercise power. People
powers.
Retain individual rights given to us by God and that government cannot touch. There's a separation. You want to talk about wall of separation? This is something we talked about when I was working with Jen Clark in Australia. We wrote an Australian Bill of Rights, and this is some of the things we include very specifically. The difference between powers and rights, the fact that all rights are individual, that they are absolute within their context, and that they are permanent. They cannot be touched. So a reasonable restriction or a compelling state interest. That language makes no sense. That's not in the Constitution. All right, so, Pianca, another question. Well, you want to follow up with that, and then we'll get on to
absolutely.
What the state
can do. So you're exactly right. You're exactly right, Greg, with what you said. But to answer your question on education, so there's a couple topics that are near and dear to me in terms of education, in terms of what has to happen in Tallahassee, one of which is already underway, and we can thank Governor Ron DeSantis for that. I'm sure you know about all this critical race theory garbage that's propagating out there.
A little bit.
Pop it up in the weirdest places, right? Pop it up in math books. Pop it up in algebra books. Who would have guessed that, right?
But is it in med school?
So one of the things.
Is it in med school?
Well, we could talk about that in a minute. Not so much, but let's just say there were programs available in medical school for certain students that weren't available for all. I'll just leave it at that.
No, get specific. Listen, I want to know. Get away with that. Get specific.
Who
were the privileged medical students? Go ahead.
Remind me about that. But I think your listeners want to know about CRT and that type of stuff.
We want to know about the other thing. We've heard about CRT. We know it's in CRT. I want to know about med school now. Now you got me curious.
I promise I'll get back to that. Yeah, give me about 3 minutes.
You're going to circle
minutes,
back? But, he's going to circle back.
Yeah, I hate that term, but yes, we will.
Why do you think I said it?
So, oh, my goodness.
Go ahead.
So critical race theory's got to go. Critical race theory is out there, and we've got to eliminate it. We've got to stamp it out. When people ask me, well, what would you do? Well, you know what we need? I don't understand why we don't teach Florida civics and Florida history in our schools. You know, I'm a product of the Mississippi public school system. I learned Mississippi history, the good and the bad. And I don't understand how we can live. Well, you know, and I don't understand how we can live in the Florida panhandle, the history of Andrew Jackson. I don't understand how we can live in the panhandle, not know who Bernardo de Galvez was. So there's a lot of education that should be taking place. And of course, it goes without saying that they need to focus on the important things like reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? I mean,
okay,
that
we know all that. We know all that. Let's get specific here. What are you going to do? What bills are you going to change? What laws? And I'm not just picking on you. I'm going to pick on every candidate that comes here.
Right.
I really want specifics. I know the platitudes. We all know them. We all know that critical race theory is bad. Okay. I want to know what you're going to do. I want to know specifically where you're going to make changes. So let's get specific here and talk about education laws, about who governs education. Is it the school board level? Is it the state level, State Department of Education, and the state legislature? Let's get this theory out of here. How do we do it?
Absolutely. So two things in terms of bills, two things that I would promote as your state representative. Number one, I would sponsor a bill advocating and requiring the teaching of Florida history in our high schools.
Okay. I like that.
Number two, Greg, and I don't know how many people know this. You know that we have elections coming up, and you have school board members running for election. I don't know how many people realize that the school board members, when they run for office, they designate that a nonpartisan race, right? So the people that run, these people that run, of course, they all masquerade as Republicans. They all say, "Man, I'm more conservative than that guy, and he's more conservative than her." Well, half of them are Democrats, Greg, and we don't know this because they're not required to list a party affiliation. I believe it's a law.
Okay, how
that
did that happen? This is really interesting. Now, this is critical because I think we need a bill, or you should either do one, or maybe we'll do one, or maybe we'll both do one. But we need to have party affiliation. There's nothing. The idea that school boards are nonpartisan is ludicrous. I mean, I would have had an extra character. I would have extra beside the name, M for Marxist.
Exactly.
you need to put something else in there. But the idea that these folks are not partisan is insane. How did that happen?
Well, and exactly, Greg, I believe the law was changed, and we can go back and look. I believe it was changed either in the late 90s or the early 2000s. It was in one of those let's hold hands kumbaya moment where, we're going to get politics out of the schools. And unfortunately, as I'm living proof of, politics has seeped into everything. It seeped into medicine. It seeped into our churches. Of course, it's in our schools. So you're exactly right. There was a Senate Joint Resolution 244 in the last session. There were some good members. I believe Spencer Roach was one of them that brought the bill forward and say, "Hey, we've got to make them designate a party affiliation." And
I
so
like it.
I would resuscitate that bill in the next session, and I do not mind putting my name to for that. It's gone. I mean, everything is partisan now, Greg. I can't walk into a patient room and write a prescription without knowing a person's political. They make it known. I mean, they inject politics into everything nowadays.
Well, let's talk
so
about it. Give me an example. Give me an example of like a medical situation that should not be political but has been.
The masks are a perfect example, Greg.
Do you have a mask policy in your practice?
So, as physicians, we tend to kind of live and let live, but by 2021, I was growing sick of it. There was really no reason for anyone to be wearing masks. At one point, I literally had to put signs up in my office saying, "You are now alone in the exam room. Please take off your mask. The doctor cannot examine your throat while you are wearing a mask." So, in terms of mask policy, that was really the only policy I had, is that, guys, come on, we've got to get back to normal. It's now or never. So, yeah, unfortunately, politics is everywhere, and certainly among your school board representatives. I'm so sick and tired of voting for people that I think are Republican, and then they get on the school board level and they do things that obviously fly in the face of Republican values. And I think as voters, we have a right to know where people stand.
Yeah, I would do the same thing for judges too. I wanted to have much more descriptive things for both school boards and judges, and definitely party registration should be required. Yeah, Pianchi, go ahead.
Yeah, and you should be able to recall them too, because they came under you under deceptive means, thinking one way and finding out something else. You should be able to recall them, and recall them in a quick time, because you cannot put a child's development on hold.
That's for sure. Yeah, there's a group, Florida Recall, which actually started. We helped them out initially with a bill to get them working, and they're doing some great work independently right now. Do you know anything about that, Joel? Florida Recall, and what do you think of the recall procedure?
So, Greg, my understanding, and again, bear in mind, I've only gotten into politics for 2 months, but my limited understanding is that it has to do with the way certain counties are set up, right? That certain counties can recall their officials and other counties can't, and that's just wrong. I mean, we need to go back. If there's a statute we need to change, if there's an amendment we need to make to the Constitution, everyone should have the right to recall their elected officials, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm always careful with the Constitution because you don't want to load it up with procedures that can be done by statute. But recall might be something that might be at the constitutional level. There's too much in the Constitution anyway. Well, let's get back to another of Pianchi's questions, state power. And I want to concentrate more on what you can do as a state representative, as opposed to – nothing when we're talking about school boards, a little bit, but I want to really concentrate on at the state level. So at the state level, you got a lot of mandates. you get vaccine mandates, you get unfunded mandates, you get requirements to do stuff. The federal government is trying to tell you how to run your life according to climate change. They're dumping illegal aliens on us like crazy. We'll take those issues separately. But just in terms of state power versus federal power versus the idea of federalism, what's your understanding and what can you do when you think the federal government's overstepping their bounds?
So, Greg, just to get back to your caller, I think your caller will appreciate, I'm a huge fan of United States history. I'm a huge fan of the founders of this country and the people who originally fought to make us the United States of America. Now, I'm not going to be one of these guys who quotes, you know, the founding fathers like Jefferson and Washington. My actual favorite founding fathers are men like Patrick Henry and George Mason.
Okay, let me ask the question again. What are you going to do at the state level to stop unfunded mandates and stop the federal government from overreaching?
Well, so I tell you that so you know that I'm a big believer in states' rights. You know, obviously we have the power. The people have the right. So the first thing we do, the first bill that's going to have my name on it, Greg, I'm going to put forward a bill. Basically, we're going to redefine exactly what constitutes a medical emergency, right?
Okay, there we go.
As y'all know, the Emergency Powers Act, these were the acts that all the governors around this, you know, and around the country, these are the acts that the governors quoted when they locked down their people, shut their schools, you know, padlocked their churches, closed certain businesses. They said, well, we declared an emergency, so we have the right to do this. Not in the state of Florida. In the state of Florida, the first bill that I will sponsor when I get to the legislature, we're going to redefine what constitutes a medical emergency. And I'm going to cut right to the chase here, Greg. Basically, what my bill is going to do, my bill is going to raise the bar so high that it would be virtually impossible for any elected official to ever use a medical excuse as a reason to padlock your church, shut your business. I mean, basically, you know that this was a gross miscarriage of justice. These things they did were definitely unconstitutional and unwarranted. So we're going to make it so that no elected official will ever be able to do this to you again. I'm old enough to remember, Greg, governors before Governor DeSantis. Obviously, I'm smart enough to know that there's going to have to be a life after Governor DeSantis. There will be other governors. So we need to codify it in the law. We need to make a law that says the future governors, the future legislatures can never do this to you ever again. No,
okay, let's talk about that for a bit. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves as to what I want to do, and I think people might be a bit confused. So I want to go back just briefly to the idea of the relationship of the state to the federal government in terms of power. So you get mandates, you know, when Brandon gets up there in his illegal administration, you know, brought about by a coup, and he says that you have to vaccinate and you have to do this and you have to do that. What can you do specifically as a Florida state legislator, you know, and what can Florida do to resist that kind of stuff? And then we'll get onto your bill.
Exactly what you're seeing with Governor DeSantis. We have to stand strong. You know, he's done some executive orders. Obviously, the legislature can enact some laws. And mm-hmm. basically, Greg, these things probably have to go through the court system, right? We have to say, no, you don't have the right to do that to us. We declare this as a sovereign state. And then it's just a matter of who's going to stand down first. And I can tell you, I'm not going to stand down. I can guarantee you that.
Well, let's talk about the courts. This is interesting. If you believe something is unconstitutional and the federal government has no power to do it, why not just simply resist? Why would you need the court's permission to do something that you've already said is legal? The federal government would have to go to court and say, we want to usurp extra authority, but not you. And I'll give you a really great example, Roe v. Wade. And then I want to get back to your bill. I'm not going to forget it. But I want to talk about this because Roe v. Wade is a situation which was never law. It was only a policy of a court that can't issue policies. It was never constitutional. And just to get back to something I wanted to bring up earlier, health and medicine are not even mentioned in the Constitution. The federal government has no ability to do anything with health or medicine. It simply isn't there.
Exactly.
It is exclusively a state power. So let's talk about that. So in terms of a Roe v. Wade and mandates and masks and things like that, if you know it's illegal for the federal government to do it, why would you, you know, whose permission would you need to resist, or could you just simply declare it and resist?
No, we wouldn't need anyone's permission. We are essentially in resistance, and we would basically bolster our governor. We would agree with him And we would say, nope, we are the sovereign state of Florida. Here's what we're doing. But undoubtedly, you know, we have to be prepared for the fact that Biden's coming after us, and I'm cool with that. I'm a guy they've already come after, Greg. I think you know my history on that. You know that they tried to decertify my board certification because of my stance. So I just want the people to understand resistance is necessary. Resistance is what we're going to do. But, you know, they're not going to just roll over. You know, they're going to come after us, and we have to be ready for that. But I am ready for that. So
okay, let's get you some options. Would you consider withholding tax money from the federal government? Would you consider banning travel from federal officers to Florida? Would you consider, you know, somehow locking out the federal government in different ways? Would you get rid of federal offices that are in Florida? How are you going to resist? Have you thought about that?
Boy, those are some good questions, Greg. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I say something?
Of course you can. I'm sorry, just yell at me. Just tell me
yourself.
Joe, okay.
The federal government has no policing authority. So what are they going to do to you? They're going to threaten if you don't drive 55 miles an hour, we're going to withhold taxes. Well, they can't withhold taxes if you don't give them to them to withhold.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, you should claim back what they call federal lands. Take those lands back, and if you as a state want to exploit those lands for the natural resources, i.e. gas or oil, do so. Then from the profits, you can give royalties to the citizens of the state. Federal government has no constitutional authority to own land other than what's stipulated in the Constitution, like sports, i.e. F troop that used to come on TV.
This is why I love Piaggy. No, it's really true. In fact, we did a show on that. But I don't think Florida has a whole lot of federal land, but I could be wrong. Do you know how much allegedly federal land the federal government is stealing from the state of Florida?
You know, that's a good question. I have not looked into that. No, sir.
Okay. And you don't have to know the answer to all our questions. I want to make it really clear that we ask amazing questions here, very detailed questions. And if you don't know, just say you don't know. I would rather have you be honest and say, look, I haven't looked. But just like
absolutely.
You did. I haven't looked into it. That's a great idea. Let's talk about that next time. Because that's something that that I don't think a lot of people know. We did an entire show on it. So we have an advantage here. I had Dr. Roger Roots on, and we talked about all the states that are west of the Mississippi that where the federal government owns up to, I think, like 80% of Nevada, they think. But in actuality, none of that's legal. It's completely unconstitutional. And this comes to state resistance. So the state of Nevada should simply say, we're packing up. We're taking down your fences. We're taking down your signs. We're kicking your asses out of here. You're not in charge anymore. That's what the state of Nevada should do, and then open up their land for oil and gas and uranium and anything else they want. Okay, now Florida doesn't have that, but I'll tell you what Florida does have is a question of offshore oil drilling. So let's talk about our natural resources here. And have you thought about the offshore drilling question, or even onshore, even drilling for oil? Because we know this area is rich. You know, it's Gulf Coast. It's, you know, it's got all kinds of good stuff. And also the fact. Well, I'll tell you about that in a minute. Offshore oil drilling. Let's start there, and we'll get more complex. What do you think?
So obviously, Greg, I've got patients that work offshore, so they tell me about their experiences, and obviously as an American citizen, I love the fact that we were energy independent there for a little while, right? I mean, that's a good thing. That's what we're supposed to be working towards. So obviously I'm in favor of getting our energy from Florida, from the United States. Obviously, we don't want to import energy from enemies. In terms of how we get there and what we do about it, obviously, that's probably something we'll have to discuss at the Tallahassee level. We have to use those resources while not hurting our beaches, you know, while protecting our tourism. So there's things like that. You know, you can go out to Dauphin Island, Alabama, and you can see the offshore rigs from Dauphin Island. I'm not sure we want that off the coast of Destin or off the coast of Navarre Beach. But
why not?
Obviously, we do have resources, and they're there to
why
be
not?
Used, no doubt.
Why? What's wrong with the site of oil rigs off the coast of Florida? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think we have way more resources than we realize, and so you'd want to have a happy medium of the two. You'd want to use those resources first that don't necessarily connote a negative for other industries in our state.
Okay, well let's talk about it, because you get oil refineries, sure. You've got oil rigs off Louisiana, off Alabama, and off Texas. Is it okay
right.
for us to take oil from those states and not drill it ourselves? And if we have a federal coup, where we've got an illegal government in Washington, would it not make sense to have Florida oil, where we could drill our own oil off the coast of Florida and use it for Floridians, where it's sold, where it's required to be sold in state? How's that for an idea?
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually, like you say.
Okay, take notes after the podcast. Take notes after the podcast. You listen to it again. Put all these things down. Go ahead, Jackie.
Yeah, and your Florida or Georgia or Alabama boundaries, their borders, as they extend out into the ocean, that area on either side should be controlled by the state, and the royalties once again go back to the state. Alabama can sell all to Florida. Alabama can sell all to Mississippi. That's the way it should be. The federal government should not be deriving anything from your natural resources other than what you want them to have.
Agreed. Joel?
Absolutely. So as part of my district, Greg, I'm made aware of the fact that there's parts of the county, northern Santa Rosa County up near Jay, you know, that used to be oil money up in Jay.
Hmm.
And so you're exactly right. We do have resources. We have resources right here in our district. And you're exactly right. They need to be utilized. In terms of how they're utilized, we would leave that up to the citizens of each area. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's something we should think about, too, because if you really want true separation between an oppressive federal government that has very limited powers and states which have very general powers, and the fact that states are actually independent nations under, you know, we could be called the United Nations, you know, if not the United States. Bianca and I talked about this. But the thing is, why shouldn't states objecting to and resisting illegal federal power have our own energy, have our own resources, have our own agriculture, have our own things that, and of course we can sell to other states. But here's the thing too, you know, especially with the technology as it is, as good as it is, you know, and, you know, oil can be drilled safely. I mean, how many oil spills have we had in the Gulf? We had the BP spill, which was horrible. That's British Petroleum, by the way, so I don't know if the British screwed up. But it'd be interesting to find out that. But stuff happens. I mean, we fly in airplanes, yet airplanes crash. We drive cars, yet cars crash. You know, I lived in San Francisco, you know, and I was there for the 89 earthquake. You know, people still lived in San Francisco, and the whole place didn't move out. You know, I was around for the blizzard of 78 in New England, the earthquake in San Francisco in 89, and I got here for Hurricane Sally. You know, stuff happens, all right? You know, but you live. You move on. And the idea that we all drive cars and that people, you know, they wanted the privilege of not the license, but just the idea that we can drive cars, but they don't want the oil derricks to get the oil. That doesn't make any sense. And if it's safe and it can be done properly, you know, why not do it? Why not have it off the coast? I never objected.
Well, so there states, you go. Absolutely.
Should states be more self-sufficient? Yeah. Let me make it more general. Should states be more self-sufficient in terms of energy and agriculture? You know, those are two big things now, energy and food. So let's talk about that. What do you think? And have you thought about that?
I definitely think that's a good idea. And
okay.
I think you see Governor DeSantis encouraging ways that we can be self-sufficient. And like, for example, when he focuses on things like election reform and keeping election integrity at the forefront, I think you're seeing steps towards, hey, this is the state of Florida, you're not going to tell us what to do type of thing. And you're exactly mm-hmm. right. There's nothing wrong with self-sufficient.
Okay. Let's see if Bianca has a question. Then I have some stuff on elections. You're going through all my checklist. I don't even have to worry about it. You're hitting all the issues I wanted to talk about. Bianca, do you have another question or do you want to jump on the election issue?
Yes. And another thing, I got two. One is in the education in the state of Florida, it's mandatory that you teach science and biology to your students. If your citizens were more biology astute, they would know that wearing a mask does not prevent viruses from walking up over the hill on your nose and coming through your eyes.
There you go.
Yeah, every time you cough, the air goes straight up. And I tried a mask for like 5 minutes once just out of curiosity. It went right into my glasses. I thought, this is stupid. Took it off.
And the last point, when it comes down to elections, the federal ballot should be separated from state and local. On the federal ballot, you only have the president, vice president, and the congressperson and U.S. senator. You have a particular way how you vet people who are going to vote by the federal ballot and use methodologies to identify who they are, either their fingerprints, iris of the eyes, or facial features. That way, illegals that like in New York, are allowed to vote on state and local issues. Well, if they got a ballot that's got a president and vice president on there, don't you think they're going to sneak up the hill and put a mark about one of those names too? How would you ever know whose ballot it is?
Joel?
Yep, I hear exactly what you're saying. Yep, these are good points.
Okay, let me get more specific then, because Pianki does have a bill to this effect. And what it would do is it would, for every election where there are state and federal offices, there are two separate ballots. There's a state ballot, state and local ballot, and there is a federal ballot. Now, I don't know if we've talked about this, Pianki. Do you want the same check, the same ID check for both of those ballots, or do you want to have people actually
federal vetting system would be different than state and local. You got to be vetted the same as you do with a U.S. passport, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how lax it is in order to go in and vote local. Let's let the states do that. Don't argue with it. But on the mm-hmm. federal ballot, these are the criteria that a citizen has to meet in order to be able to mark this ballot.
And that makes sense.
The Constitution allows for that too, by the way.
Mm-hmm. No, I believe you. If you want to get the section, then that'd be great. But specifically now, so you're saying this would be two, almost like two separate elections. You'd vote in the state election, you'd turn in your ballot, and then you go through a federal check to pick up your federal ballot. Right? Is that how that would work?
Well, when you walk in the polling place, you got one side with booths that's for federal candidates. Then
right.
all the other booths can be for state and local. It's just a way of going from one side to the other. If people don't meet the criteria to vote for a federal candidate, as far as identification is concerned, rather than walking in with a trash bill that you could have picked up out of a trash can, well, you're not going to be able to do that to vote on a federal ballot.
Yeah, I'm just thinking logistically. So as long as people get one ID check that would cover both, that'd be great. They could be different criteria. But if either one is rejected, either state or federal, then that person should be tossed out. But let's talk to Joel about this because he probably hasn't heard this before. The idea of separate federal and state ballots for any election where you have both involved so that we don't have that confusion and crossover and we minimize the vote fraud from illegals. What do you think?
So, yeah, Greg, that's that is a new concept for me. I've never heard that before. I didn't see it on the website. I was looking at a few of the bills that you guys have proposed, and there's some really good ideas there. But no, this one's new. I'm not quite sure I followed, because what I'm hearing, so mm-hmm. even though I haven't been to Tallahassee yet, one thing I can recommend is that we keep it simple when it comes to the government. You know, we don't want more layers and more stuff. So I might be misunderstanding. I would want those protections for both federal and state. I wouldn't want somebody to be rejected from filling out a federal ballot, but yet they can come vote me out, if you see what I'm saying. I say
no,
if
and you
you're
can put
illegal,
that in the bill.
They should vote in either
yeah, you
one,
can put that
right?
In the state bill. Yeah. I'll get Pianki to explain it.
Exactly.
Yeah, we agree. We agree on you on that. But, Joel, you're not going to get 50
yeah.
states to walk lock step. You're not going to do it.
I
haven't utilized, I think it's in Article 1, maybe Article 4 in the Constitution. They say that the federal government can set the standard of its ballot, not the location of the polling place. That's up to the state legislature. But the federal
right.
government can set the standards and requirements, vetting system on federal candidates' ballots. And I think that would solve a lot of this problem of illegal. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama lowered the bar just by giving illegals the options to have driver's licenses. A driver's license
right.
is the main criteria you can go in and present that will let you vote. I tell you something else, too. You know, illegals can get the I-10 number, individual tax identification number, because they're not supposed to be working and they don't qualify as Social Security number. Well, they can take
right.
the I-10 number and they can go to a bank and take out a home mortgage. After they do the signing of the papers and so on and so on, they can take those papers to the local registration and register to vote because they can show a address, and they are illegal.
Yeah, yes. The system is ripe for fraud. It's terrible. Greg, I can give you my own example of stuff like that. I don't know if you're aware. So my wife is from Great Britain, so she's a legal immigrant. You know, she
so
I
am
met
I.
her and yeah, I met her
birth.
In university. Oh, how
uh-huh.
about that? We'll talk about Canada in a second. So I met her in Great Britain. I was studying overseas at the University of Wales. Met her. I came back to America. We got engaged. We had to go through the fiance visa. You know, we had to pay the fees for that. We had to pay the fees to see a specific doctor who could certify that my wife did not have tuberculosis. You know, we had to go through the marriage interview process, all that. So we are not anti-immigrant. That is, let's be clear about that.
We weren't talking immigrants. We were talking illegal aliens. We haven't mentioned immigrants.
Exactly. Exactly. I just want your listeners to know that that, like I said, as the husband, as the husband of someone from Great Britain, this is not about immigration. This is about following the Constitution, following the law. And yeah, the system is rife with fraud, Greg. The example I was going to give, so if you're from Canada, you probably know what a Nexus card is, right?
No, I left when I was 8 years old.
Okay. Well, so a Nexus card, Greg, is something that my wife and I used to have. It's basically a five-year card. Basically, we go through FBI background checks and all that. We used to run up to Canada once a year just to see snowfall, you know, and have a vacation. So instead of sitting at the border for an hour, we would apply for one of these Nexus cards where they just basically wave you on through because you've been through the highest security screening to get that card. And, you know, that Nexus card we would use for identification at the local airports, and your TSA would not know what a Nexus card was. They said, "What is that? Give us your driver's license." It's like, are you kidding me? This is more secure than a driver's license. You can't just walk up and get a Nexus card like your caller was talking about walking up and getting a driver's license. So the system's rife with fraud. We have all these different identifications. Half the people don't even know what purpose they serve or how to get one or what they recommend. You know,
let's pick one for voting. Exactly. So would a Nexus card make sense for Florida in terms of voter ID? Because I had to show my passport. In fact, the nice thing about Florida was that it wasn't done on driver's license. You don't have motor voter here in California where anybody can show up and do the fraud the system with the ITIN number. So what would you want a Nexus type card for Florida to secure our vote?
So the elections definitely need to be secure. How we get there, I think, is up for
debate.
I think you're right. I think that's a great question. You're exactly right.
Okay. So I want you to come back with options for me. You know, I mean, I want to get real specific here because you're good on the story. I love the story, but I want to make sure people have a chance to evaluate you based on the issues, based on things they can really latch onto. So let's talk about some specifics. We've covered ID. How about voting machines? Should Florida have voting machines? Yes or no?
So you're talking about the Dominion machines?
Any machines. Well, tell me about them.
Obviously, after the last couple of elections, obviously I'm no fan of the voting machines. I need to see what other options are out there. But, no, I'm no fan of these machines. I can tell you that.
Okay. We have an idea here, or at least I think I've talked to Pianki about this. Counted were cast, okay, so that the votes are not transported. All right. So they
there
come to. So when you vote during you vote on voting day. Okay, you vote on voting day. Yeah, thanks, Pianki. You vote on voting day, and your ballot is counted right there. The results are reported right there. Now you can transport them after for security and things like that, but the votes have to be counted where cast. What do you think?
Sounds like a great idea. Are we not doing that currently? I mean, that's crazy.
I don't know. I know they're not doing it in the states, the battleground states, you know, where they put Brandon. Look at 2,000 mules documented that votes are coming in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's talk early voting. Yes or no?
You know, I'm just, as a constitutionalist, I've never understood the concept of early voting. It's great that so many people take advantage of it. I personally have just never understood the concept to me.
Okay, so maybe yes or no.
Maybe you can
give me a definitive.
Yeah,
I want to pin you down here. Yes or no?
I always vote on election day, and that's my bias on that. I believe
state legislature,
there for a reason, so
state legislature, early voting, yes or no?
Yeah, I would have to talk to people and find out why we do that in the first place.
Okay. Counted where cast, yes or no?
Oh, definitely.
Absentee voting.
For military and stuff like that, of course.
Okay. Why don't we count the military ballots at the military base? If somebody's at Aviano, Italy, why don't we count their vote there and just transmit the results? Why do we have to ship those ballots here? Why do military have to ballots?
I've got you one better than that, Greg. If there are absentee ballots... Yeah, if there are absentee ballots, right, why aren't those counted the morning of? Why don't we go into the election knowing the final docket of the absentee? Why are the absentee ballots always kept as like a surprise birthday cake at the end of the night that can swing an election. Why don't we know those results before we even get started that morning?
I'm in favor. Sounds good to me. If absentee ballots should be in by polling, they should be counted maybe the day before or the morning of. Yeah, that'd be fine. I got no problem.
Yeah. And like I say, count them where they are. Count them where they are, where there's no chance of less chance, of fraud.
So you can't change the federal elections in Florida, but you can change the Florida elections. So members who are legal to vote, eligible to vote in Florida and local elections who are serving overseas, they should have a provision from the state of Florida where they can vote on their base. The vote is counted on their base, and those results are securely transmitted back here to the election authorities. Make sense?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Okay. We got 15 minutes left. Boy, this has gone fast. This is a great hour. Jackie?
Another thing, too, the way the Democrats always go find a black face to say that this law or this reform is designed to prevent blacks from voting, you need to have a black face that says just the opposite. That way you dilute their message and put it in the place of what it is. It's racist. It's blacks portraying racism, trying to prevent fraud. That's all you're trying. You're trying to prevent fraud. So they're going to say, well, these laws are designed to stop minorities and disenfranchise blacks from voting. Well, they are not. But they always got the one person that says that, but they don't have the other person that says, well, that's just not true.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Good point. Let me, we only have a few minutes left, about 15. I definitely want you back. This is great. Let's talk about a couple issues here. One of the big ones for me is constitutional carry, gun rights. And the left is constantly trying to portray, law-abiding citizens as criminals, when, in fact, we actually have real criminals out there doing really bad things. Buffalo, the New York shooter, I think California had some problems and things like that. As a doctor, people are going to say, you're a doctor. How could you condone gun ownership? What's wrong with you? And all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about that from a medical perspective for the objectives you're going to get. First of all, constitutional carry. Are you in favor? Would you help bring that about in Florida? Yes or no?
Yes, I'm definitely in favor, and yes, I will help you bring that about. It's one of those things, Greg. I was touring the district the other day, visiting people up in Laurel Hill. I go across the state line into Florala because I have patients from as far away as Florala. I was dropping off yard signs. So I get out of the car in downtown Florala, and my patient, his holster and his guns right there on his side, right there at his waist. And to think that if we had driven 2 miles south, that would have been illegal. The thought did occur to me that, wow, he has more rights in Alabama than we would have 2 miles south in Florida. And so, it kind of hits you like that when you go from state to state, you realize that, why are we not constitutional carry? It makes sense.
Considering the leadership
Florida,
that we had earlier. Yeah. And this is an really important point. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, what's important about it is
we're claiming that we're the free state of Florida. We're free about a lot of things, but this is one thing where we need to work on, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Pianki's talking about this too, and I'm a firm believer in the normalizing of the sight of guns. If you normalize it, if you have, young mothers walking down the street with a couple of kids and a holstered .45, and that's a normal thing, that's one of the greatest advancements to our rights that you can have. Pianki, did you have something like that?
Absolutely. Get more women involved with open carry.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not legal, just take a curtain and hang over the gun. You can still see the imprint and let a person's imagination just run wild.
Well, once we get open carry, I may start to wear shirts that only partially can see, just to amuse myself. I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet, and we'll see how that works out. But that's critical. Now, let's get the doctor thing. You hear doctors, I've treated gunshot wounds. It's horrible. But those are criminals. So how do you separate the acts of criminals from the rights of the law-abiding when it comes to guns as a doctor?
Well, and Greg, to be honest, I think it all goes back to what your beliefs are. I mean, do you believe in the Constitution or not? Because that overrides everything, right? I was at an event the other night where I said, we don't get to pick and choose which amendments in the Bill of Rights that we honor and which ones we throw out. They're all as sacred as each other. So if you believe in the First Amendment, well, by definition, you must believe in the Second Amendment as well. So I think it all goes back to that. And you know, and again, having a wife from Great Britain, you know, they don't really have a whole lot of guns in Great Britain. You know, they're
they don't have a First Amendment either. They have an official secrecy act.
And I tell you what, they do have. They have a lot of stabbings. They have a lot of beatings. You know, so people who are going to be violent are going to find other ways of being violent. Killers are going to find other ways to kill. I mean, that's just a fact.
Okay, now what I want you to do, though, is separate, and when you're talking about this, separate the actions of criminals. Our rights are not dependent on the actions of criminals. The fact that some wacko, insane, emotionally disturbed, mentally, you know, whacked out person in Buffalo who wanted fame more than anything else, I think that person's using racism, is smart enough to use the racism in this country to gain fame. Their actions have nothing to do with the Second Amendment. The actions of law-abiding gun owners to own and carry firearms has nothing to do with the actions of criminals any more than bank robbers. If you want to stop bank robbers, you know, you seize the money from depositors. Okay? That's the equivalent. I posted on Facebook this morning. You can use that, by the way.
Right, Greg.
But separate those.
And Greg,
separate when you talk about this. The actions. Go ahead. You know what I'm talking about.
No, you're 100% correct. We see eye to eye on it. You're exactly right. That's the thing that infuriates me the most about government, is that you get this reactionary blowback, and it's not against the people who committed the crime. It's against the people who were already following the law. And again, a good example I can give of that, Greg, I think you'll like this. I look at the TSA and I say, what an overreach. What an overreach. When you look at what we have to go through nowadays to board an airplane, we knew who caused 9/11, right? They never should have been allowed to be in this country in the first place. So they take the criminals of 9/11, and because of their acts, they treat us all like we're going to bring down the next plane, and it's ridiculous. You know, I've been in the Fort Walton Beach Airport, Greg, where they are patting down. You know, they're saying, "Oh, sorry, Colonel, we have to do this." No, you don't have to do this. The retired colonel's not going to bring down the 737. I can promise you that. You know,
the cab driver is who just got here. Yeah, he's.
I miss the days of common sense. And like you say, this is how government responds. This is how government behaves, not by punishing the criminal, but by punishing the people who were obeying the law in the first place. And you've got that. You hit that nail right on the head. Absolutely.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Let's get a couple more issues. We have just a little bit of time. Transgenderism. Is this just a personal mental issue? Why is it a civil right?
Yeah, I don't believe it should be a civil right. I think this is something between the person and their families and their priest and their doctor. This does not need to be something that's out in the public. It certainly doesn't need to be something that's taught in the schools. And that's unfortunate that it's come to that. I think that's another thing that's creeping into the schools, as you can see. And then, of course, Disney got caught up in the whole thing, right? I think you know how our governor responded to Disney, and I applaud him
pretty
for
well.
That.
Okay. Well, so you know, what are you going to do? As a doctor, how would you define this? Would you define this as a mental or issue, a personal problem? What would you do in the state legislature, you know, when people say, well, I want to have transgender rights? What are you going to do?
I would say you already have rights. They're called the Bill of Rights. You know, we don't need special rights for special groups of people. We were all guaranteed the same rights, and it's right there in the Bill of Rights. So, no, I don't believe in extra protections. I don't believe in separate protections. I don't believe in one group has priority over another. We are all Americans. And, yeah, that's what I would do in the legislature. And I don't think people realize Governor DeSantis, he is a strong guy. What he did to Disney, people don't realize that Disney had rights that no one else in the state of Florida had. Disney had a sweetheart deal, took advantage of that. I don't think even Disney realized the sweetheart deal they had. And I applaud our governor for taking the steps that he took. That was very brave action on his part.
Yeah, he's doing a great job, but he sucked in the beginning because he had the Safer at Home program, which I objected to immediately. You know, as soon as he said stay home in the early parts of COVID, I immediately went for a drive, played country music out my car window as loud as I could, and I sang. I said, screw you, Governor. I'm not staying home. Anyway, but that's me. I'm just a natural rebel. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, you know, and I am too, Greg. I'm with you there, man. I grew up on heavy metal, rock and roll. I'm with you. And I remember those days. I remember when I would go out to the beach and there would be barricades on the beach. So the good thing about our governor, he knew when he was duped. And it's the same with me, right? It's the same thing with doctors. You know, we were told this stuff, and a lot of us came around. Some of us took longer than others. But it takes a man to admit, hey, I was wrong. And I think our governor, he was the first to turn around and say, hey, this is crazy. We're not doing this anymore.
No, he wasn't
first.
So
I applaud our governor.
He was kind of late to the party, but that's okay. I don't fault him for that. He's in right. Okay, let's talk about the Constitution and the Florida Constitution and mandates. So what could you do as a legislator to prevent this kind of mandate from ever happening again? Do you want a constitutional amendment? Do you want to have statutes? Do you want to what do you want to do?
So, Greg, one thing about you, I know there's a website called writeyourlaws.com that I was looking at. You had a couple great ideas on there. And so you heard about my plan to sponsor a bill to basically redefine a medical emergency. I got to be honest with you, Greg, you kind of stole my thunder because you have one on writeyourlaws.com, which is fantastic. There's that one. And then there's one on parental rights where you have some really good ideas. Your approach is to go back and look at the statutes and delete the unnecessary wording, the wording that makes it unique or the wording that makes it objectionable. And you know what? You've got it right, Greg. That is the purpose of legislature. You know, I'm sorry, this is from my stump speech, right? When I go around, I say, what's the purpose of the legislature? And everybody says, to make the laws. I say, well, you're wrong. I said, I'm not going to go to Tallahassee, you know, thinking that I know more than the 2,000 people who came. I'm not going to add law on top of law on top of law. I said, part of our job is we're supposed to review the laws. We're supposed to say, why the hell was this even in there? You know, can we eliminate this law? Can we eliminate this statute? Can we eliminate the wording of this statute? So I've got to applaud you there, Greg. I can tell that
you've
taken a hard look at some of these topics.
Oh, yeah.
And your approach seems to be, why the hell is this even in here? And can we just strike this? And I got to admit that the thing you put on there about the medical emergency, I think we're lockstep with you on that. I love what you can do.
If you want, if you make a comment, put a comment on the bill, and I'll see it when it comes in. If you want to add that section to it, if you want to add that to either the parental bill of rights or to the public health bill. For those that don't know what we're talking about, I wrote two bills for the Florida State Legislative Special Session that was, I think, last November, and to get rid of some of the mandate language. And they just did something really stupid. Their bills were horrible. They were inadequate, and they didn't cover the issue. So we should talk more about this next time. But and we can prep people. We can post these as well. But I wrote two bills, one on parental rights, took out the legislative – I'll get you in a second which took out the idea that the legislature could control your rights. And the second, the public health bill, really puts everything under the Constitution and informed consent. And so those are the two big changes. Pianchi, go ahead. We've got about a couple more minutes with
Another thing, the state needs to protect borders more. The federal government has no business flying illegals across your border, landing in airports, and dispersing the illegals throughout your state the way they are presently doing.
Border. Yeah. Now, that's critical, too. Let's just make sure we've covered this one. Anything else on parental rights or public health? And you might be able to stay a few extra minutes because Shelby sometimes is a couple minutes late in calling in. So if you want to do that, let's go parental rights. So the parental rights bill takes out all the stuff that the state would have control of parental rights. And you like that bill?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was also on writeyourlaws.com. And, yeah, you've got that right 100%. And, again, eliminate all that unnecessary verbiage where I forget, Greg, you probably remember the actual text I'm talking about. The verbiage goes on to say that except where the government has involvement. It's like, no, we don't need the government involved in any of that. And you recommended deleting that, and I agree with you on that.
Yep. I got the language right here, but I don't want to go into it just because of lack of time. And the other one, of course, is public health under the Constitution. Okay, let's get to the illegal alien question, because Bianchi's absolutely right. We have a bill here for the county of Santa Rosa, which you could bring to the state level, which uses civil asset forfeiture as a way to dissuade self-deport illegal aliens, because if illegal aliens are found in our county here or in the state of Florida, you could do this at the state level. Say, look, we're just going to seize your stuff. We're going to seize your house. We're going to seize your car. We're going to seize your bank accounts. We're going to seize everything you have, because the fact that you're in the country illegally makes everything that you have illegally gotten gains. How's that for a procedure?
Well, you know, that's how it is in a lot of other countries. Like I said, I went to college in Wales. They didn't just waive me, and there was a process I had to go through. And if I overstayed my welcome, I mean, you know, there are prices to pay for illegal behavior, and you're absolutely right. I reviewed that thing that you guys posted on. Again, I believe that was on writeyourlaws.com. So I just need to give that a more thorough review.
Okay, that makes
sense. It was a lot of verbiage there, but the way you summarized it just now, Greg, I agree. There has to be a price to pay for illegal activity.
Okay, how about because citizenship is a public declaration. It's not private information, so you should be able to find out anybody's citizenship. You have to declare it when you come into the country. You should also have to declare it when you're in the country. Civil asset forfeiture basically seizes things. Now, how about the companies that employ illegal aliens? Would you seize the companies too?
So I have not thought about that. Obviously, they're not supposed to be hiring illegals, so they're already breaking the law by doing that. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So again, why are they allowed to do this with no price to pay? I don't understand that.
Okay, NGOs, well, Catholic charities, profits. Lutheran charities, Baptist charities, should they be seized also for transporting illegals within our state, even if they're being paid by the feds? And then I'll get to Bianchi.
Yeah, so
a lot to think about, isn't it?
So, was that for me or was that for your caller?
That's for you. And then I'll get to Bianchi. I'll let him.
Yeah,
because I totally abused Bianchi this morning. I'm sorry. So, NGOs. How about seizing NGOs, their property in the state of Florida?
So again, if you're going to conduct illegal activity, if you're going to engage in illegal behavior, there has to be a price to pay.
Let's get back to you.
Well, yeah, they should, because they're the one that's coaching these illegals. And another thing, if an employer uses illegals to gain profits, those profits should be subjected to a seizure, because you got an illegal producing something that the illegal shouldn't have been in an activity at all.
Yeah, and Bianchi asked more questions because I've sort of monopolized your time a little bit. Bianchi, if you have any other questions, or do you want to respond to that, Joel? Do you have a question? Do you want to respond to what Bianchi said? And then I'll turn it back over to him.
Yeah, so absolutely, guys. Like I said, it all boils down to whether you believe in the Constitution or not. I mean, if you believe in the Constitution,
what do you mean or not?
Pretty frank. I mean, the language
mean
is pretty basic. I mean, it's not open for discussion. I mean, you either believe in the Constitution or you don't. And hopefully there's enough Americans that do believe in the Constitution that want to continue to follow it, because that's what I do.
Wait a minute.
I follow
if you don't
the
believe
Bible,
in the Constitution. You cannot believe in the Constitution. It doesn't mean it goes out of – it's not in effect. I mean, this isn't a belief system. It's like saying, would you believe in climate change? Well, that's irrelevant. The laws of physics are immutable. You know, climate change is going to happen. Bianchi?
Absolutely. I'm with you there.
Okay.
I'm just trying to rationalize the behavior of people who disagree with this. That's what I'm trying to do. They obviously have no regard for the Constitution if they take offense to the things that we've discussed today.
Bianchi?
Well, Joel, when you come to Action Network
Radio,
you want to make sure you bring pencil and paper. Bring pencil and paper.
Yep.
Well, also, too, you get the podcast, and the podcast will be available in about 2 hours. So we have a couple more hours. I'm just waiting for Shelby. Like I say, we have a couple of extra minutes here. Anything you want to talk about, any issue that we haven't covered that you think should be done? And also, let's get your contact information so people can reach out and get in touch with you.
Absolutely, Greg. So the best way to reach us would be through social media. So I'm on Twitter, Dr. Joel Rubin for Florida House. I'm on Facebook, Dr. Joel Rubin for Florida House. We have some events coming up. So, Greg, I play electric guitar. I'm a physician. I'm running for state representative. So our next meet and greet is going to be June the 9th at Stripes Pub and Grill at 6 p.m. Come out and meet us at Stripes Pub and Grill. That's a very patriotic, very, very pro-American place down here in Navarre, Florida. Come out and hear us give a speech. Come out and shake a hand, and we're going to jam for you. We're going to be playing some rock music for you that evening. So that should be fun.
Post it on Messenger. Remind me. Let's get you on right before that event, either that day or the day before. What kind of guitar you got?
So I've got several. I've got a Les Paul, you know, the old kind of classic Les Paul, you know, that my hero Ace Frehley of Kiss used to play. And then I've got a newer guitar. There's a band out of Sweden called Ghost. I don't know if you ever heard of Ghost. They use a guitar called a Hagstrom guitar. It's a pretty cool white looking guitar. Kind of looks like a Gibson Explorer sort of. So it's kind of a newer look guitar. But yeah, so I'll be playing one or the other of those. My first guitar was a Kramer Striker, you know, the old offset Flying V. So that's kind of cool. So hey, if you can't make the ninth, June the 9th, we're also doing another. We call it Rock with the Doc. So we're doing another Rock with the Doc. We're basically, Greg, going on tour. That one's going to be June 25th at East River Smokehouse in Navarre. So
yeah,
if you can't make one, definitely make the other. Yeah, those are going to be awesome, buddy. You'll get to hear us rock out, and you'll get to hear some pro-constitutional. So basically, Greg, that's the point I wanted to make, right, is the fact that this is all about our freedoms as American citizens, right? They've been trying to erode our freedoms bit by bit. COVID definitely accelerated that process, and I, for one, wasn't going to take it lying down. I don't know if your listeners know that there was a physician freedom of speech bill before the Florida legislature earlier this year, back in February, that I went and testified on behalf of. Would you believe, Greg, that there are senators and representatives in Tallahassee who were debating whether or not a physician should have the freedom of speech?
Oh, believe me. Listen, we've got a medical freedom report. I got to hold you up because we've got Shelby on the line. But we do have a medical freedom report on Thursdays with Cindy Cagle. And so her group represents, there was a bill to basically honesty and free speech for doctors. So, you know, they can't be, you can't be persecuted or prosecuted because of what you say or what you believe, simply because it goes against government policy, especially when the government policy is killing people. Let's talk about that later. We got to go.
Right.
So if you want to hang on the line for a bit, you want to listen to our cruise and travel report, feel free. But it's been great to have you on. We'll have you back. Let me know about those events. We'll get those posted and we'll talk about it. And see, I'm a Strat guy, so I play G&L guitars because my hands are too big for Gibsons.
Oh, cool.
Look at these lumberjack hands. So I need the bigger neck. But we'll talk music sometime. Yeah,
hey, Greg,
real quick.
One last pitch. VoteDocRudman.com. Go to VoteDocRudman.com and you can read all about me. You could see my campaign. VoteDocRudman.com. Thanks a lot, Greg. Appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you, too. It's been fun. That was great.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
You're live, Shelby. Watch what you say now. It's live. We're having a great morning. We had our first candidate on running for Florida State House, state representative. So it was kind of interesting. Shelby, what's going on? Take us away. Take us away from politics. Take us somewhere fun and exciting.
Well, there's lots of fun stuff. Love is definitely, I'm still in the running. I got a text message yesterday. I was checking in and all of my videos and pictures were uploaded last week, and they were creating what they called a glossy package.
Ooh.
Present to the producers. So basically, I think like a little sizzle reel on my behalf. So that was exciting.
A sizzle
and
reel?
Then,
what's that?
A sizzle reel is like when you have something, if you're an actress, an actor, or you're selling a product, and you do like a 30-second to a minute little video montage of like what you have to offer, who you are, what you've done, that type of thing.
Ooh, like a demo tape.
Yeah, a demo tape.
You know, for bands and stuff. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I want to hear all about this. I find this process fascinating. I don't think many people have the chance to audition for a TV show. So I'm interested in the process of how it all works and all the things you have to do. I actually took a look at the application. The application is huge. You know, I mean, they want to know everything. They want to know your interests. Do you like sunsets, you know, and walks on the beach? I mean, what do you do for fun? Tell us your life story. It's really quite involved. This is a serious process.
Yeah, I think every process is a little different. We did go through this process a couple years ago because we were working with a casting agent that was looking for singles, and, you know, I was helping to feed them my clients and give people opportunities to get on a show. But then, of course, COVID happened, so that didn't work out. that process is a little different. She would just, she was asking me to send her qualified leads to interview, and they would do a video interview. And basically they just, they're asking you to talk to the video camera like you're, so they can use that footage and put it in your demo reel if they want to move forward with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a very relaxed interview style. The application, the online application for this particular episodes that they're doing is not, was not very involved. It was very, it was pretty much just like one or two pictures and just a little bit about your love life. Now I suspect that, you know, the next step will be a lot more involved. And in fact, I heard they do a background check. She actually asked me if I'd been arrested and I said, no. And she's like, oh, that's
not
good.
Yet.
And I was like, oh,
but the day
yeah.
is young.
I was like, that's great. You know, it's definitely, you know, you are there. If I, when I do get chosen, let's just assume I've already got the job.
Shelby, there is nobody in the country that is more cruise director than you. If you don't get this, then there's something seriously wrong. Am I biased? Absolutely. But you should get this. So keep going. Just assume that it's yours. Just walk proudly in there with your captain's cap and scarf from your picture and say, I am Julie. I am the cruise director.
I am.
You know, in your sweet, cute,
yeah,
angelic voice.
So,
and just get out there and just be you and just assume that it's yours.
Thank you. I am definitely trying. It's great advice, by the way, and I have given it. It's just very hard to take because I think you're always, yeah, I think there's always some sort of self-deprecating natural tendencies, and, you know, there's just when things haven't been going your way, you don't expect them to go your way. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. But
I expect them to go my way, but they seldom do. But it's like I still keep trying, you know. But it's like with action radio. Here's a perfect example. I always assumed this would work out, and I assumed it would be difficult, and I assumed all the things that usually happen. You know, you go broke, you have to struggle. There are things that you never expected, like COVID censorship, you know, stuff. I mean, but that's all part of the process. But I never assumed for a second that this wouldn't work out, and things are exploding right now at Action Radio. We've got, I don't want to take up your time with that, but you just keep watching what's happening here. We are going to be a massive show at some point. I'm talking millions of listeners, including worldwide, you know, because I'm already helping with an Australian Bill of Rights and things like that. But I've always believed in the process. I never thought for a second that it wouldn't work. I knew it'd be tough. I didn't know what the problems I was going to face, but that didn't matter because overall I knew it was going to work. And I think the same thing for you. You are the cruise director. You know, you've been a cruise director. You know, you've been a cruise director probably more than I would say 90% of the cruise directors out there. So it's not like you don't know what you're doing. So for you not to have any confidence is crazy. Besides, you're like totally hot. You know, how can they pick anybody else?
It's not that I don't have confidence in my abilities of being a cruise director. It's not that. It's the logistics of why people get chosen to be on TV, et cetera. Like, you know,
why
that,
do people get chosen
whole...
to be on TV?
I,
do you know anything
I
about the process? Okay.
I think, you know what, I just feel like there's a lot of, anytime there's a great opportunity, people like to pay off to, you know, get to the top, and that's a big, that's a real thing, and I don't have the options to do that, so, you know.
Are you talking about sleeping your way to the top? Is that what goes on? Is that what you're saying, or is it something totally different?
Sleeping paying is what I said, but you know, some sort of...
Okay. You can be blunt on the show. You know us. We like to... In fact, I think I surprised... Pianki would have talked about this, but I think I surprised our first candidate that I could tell when he was doing some speech stuff. And it's like, I just interrupt him constantly. I want to cut through all that nonsense and get to the issues. You know, this is what we do here. And so be blunt, feel free. You know, this is, if you can't say it here, you
well,
probably
I think
can't say
a lot
it.
Of people will pay, will make arrangements or there's favors. And, you know, there's always people at the top are getting preferential treatment because it's, you know, you rub my back, I rub yours. And I don't have any of those opportunities. So, I don't have any issue. I know I'm the right person for the job and for the show, and I am the cruise director. I just have seen a lot of, unfair bullshit that happens over
just people wanting to get to the top faster and knowing people, and it's all who you know and all that. So, you know, it's just...
Are there payoffs? Like there used to be payola, you know, where record companies would actually pay DJs to play certain songs more often. It was ruled illegal and judged illegal, and people went to jail for it. Are there things like that behind the scenes that we don't know about in terms of TV? Are people actually being either paid one way or another with maybe trips, maybe favors, maybe, you know, the casting couch, you know, and or just straight out money? Are people being bribed to take certain candidates by agents?
Right. So there's all that. So that's my unknown factor. If it was just on merit alone, it would be a no-brainer. But, yeah, so anyway, I'm going to assume I'm going. And so the next part of the process is she texted me, and she said that they are finishing up the interviews this week and presenting to the producers next week. So I hope we'll know, or maybe the week after. And, yeah, it's exciting. I mean, she wrote me a very nice text saying I'm rooting for you and really crossing my fingers.
Oh, that's good. That's really encouraging. Yeah. And we have postings on our Facebook page, on our Cruise and Travel page. Where can people find your audition and more information about your candidacy for this, or whatever it's called? See if you can get it. Where can people learn more about it if they're curious?
We have a group that we're building so that I'm kind of putting all the information in there. So, the Real Love Boat, or they can just find me on Facebook, Shelby Frenette, or if you want to find me through an easier way, because it's hard to spell Frenette, ShelbyLive.com. And then any of those ways you can get in contact with me and I can get you in the group. But it's super fun. I'm super excited that, you know, this is an opportunity that would be life-changing. And of course, you know, my life's work has been about giving people this opportunity to experience Cupid on a cruise ship. And it's so fun. And I really hope that, you know, more people understand that it's an opportunity that they didn't realize was there, because more people are single than ever. And I really believe that this is one of the best things for solo travelers and single people, because you are around like-minded people, you know, and you end up having a great time, and you've got that magic of the ocean, a little bit of disconnection from electronics. And it really helps to just bring vulnerability back into your heart, I think. And that creates a really great organic space for love and attraction to thrive. If it's already there, it's seen. Because I do feel that we're often too busy, and we're also very, very pointed, like the whole swiping, all the dating apps, you know. First of all, there's a lot of scammers in general and online. It can get just extraordinarily exhaustipating to constantly be scammed, like, you know, and wasting your time over somebody that's just trying to get some money from you or a free dinner. And this, at least, you know, when you meet someone face-to-face, the scamming ability goes down exponentially, you know, back to 10% rather than 100%. And it brings hope back into your heart, too. And worst-case scenario, you meet a lot of friends that actually like to travel and have the money to travel, because it's, you know, as you get older, your friends become married or broke, and it's like you still want to travel, but you don't want to be completely alone. You don't need to be totally solo. You still would like to, you know, enjoy company of other people. So this is just really an untapped, unknown thing, this, you know, solo sailings and singles going on trips together. It's not very well known. It's really an underground thing for the most part. So I'm excited to bring it to the world.
No, I think this is fascinating. In fact, you answered the question I was going to ask about the magic of a cruise. What is it about a cruise? I think the fact that you're away from your routine, that you're already open to something new, because you don't do the familiar things that take up your day, and people get so busy with their regular day that there's no time for stuff. And so they resort to online dating. And like you say, there are scammers all over the place. You've got narcissists, you've got, you know, people scamming dinner, like you said, you've got all this, and you may use a word I've never heard before, exhaustipated. Did you actually say that?
Yeah.
Is that a Shelby
word?
Or is that a real word?
Yeah, that's a real word.
Really? Well,
one
I
of
new
my
words
colleagues
this is great.
Used it all the time, and I looked it up, and I was like, oh, it's a really good word. I'm going to use that.
Yeah. But you know what's nice about a cruise is it's personal. It's one of the few places left, you know, online. It's not personal. It's a job interview. You know, it's like a relationship job interview. you know, and when you're on a cruise, you actually see, and you see people multiple times. You see them at dinner, you see them at the volleyball court, you see them at, you know, the dance club at night, you see them at the comedy show, you're sitting by the pool. And especially if you start meeting people, especially if you're in a singles group on a cruise, you know, these people see each other, they take tours together, they do all kinds of things. It's magic.
Right.
It's like, you know, being in a band in high school and college, you're guaranteed to meet somebody because you're in a like group of people. You know, if you're in a theater production, there's always romances in theater productions, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you're creating, it's a world unto itself, and it's very special. I love cruising. I love being out on the ocean. It's absolutely fabulous. But it does create a world that's different for most people, right?
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
And all those points you made were really totally on point of what exactly what I would explain it as. But I think it's even more, it's more personal. And when you say you run into people again and again, I think that element alone has a huge romance factor. And I think it has to do with like our primal instincts. Like if you notice in the animal kingdom, there always has to be a familiarity time, nobody, they don't just run up on each other and love each other. They really need a familiarity, like a sniffing, a meeting, an encounter, another encounter. And I don't feel that way personally, but I know being in psychology and having worked with so many people that is the way most people work. They really need like this familiarity to cultivate before they can open their trust mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's provided on a cruise ship specifically in an intense environment. I would say like 7 days on a cruise ship is like, you know, 30 or 60 days on land, but it's like set up.
For some
reality.
People, they need a vacation from their vacation.
Now that's true. That's true. But like you start to get closer to people, and again, it has to do with a lot of things. It has to do with literal proximity, just the proximity of being around someone again and again. And again, it just that sort of lends itself to that human need for a lot of people to feel familiar before they can get close. And but it's in a sped up environment, like you said, you see them at the casino, you see them at the pool, you see them at the tours. And so they are able to sort of naturally let down their defenses quicker and connect quicker than they would on regular land life. And so these types of situational romances, it like you said, with drama club, it's this experience together. It's this familiarity. It's a lot of magic on ships. It's being on the water.
We just cut up for a second. Yeah. We just lost you for a second there. Yeah. Well, the motion of the ocean, I mean, you're out there. It's an unfamiliar place to a lot of people. You know, I feel like I'm still on the ocean like 2 days later. Because, you know, once you get your sea legs, you know, they keep going. It's like, why is my room moving? You know, we're on dry land now. It's kind of weird. Let's get Bianca in this. Then I got another question for you. Bianca, do you have a comment for Shelby?
No, I'm just lambasted listening.
Okay, we need to get you water bested. Then we'll get. I made up a new word there too. You know what's interesting too, Shelby, about a cruise ship. There's not the time pressure, because if you're in a club trying to meet somebody, or if you're on a speed dating trying to meet somebody, or if you're online trying to meet somebody, or you're that coffee trying to meet somebody, it's like you have to make your decisions there. You know, and even if you say, well, let's meet later, let's do this again next week, you know, but on a cruise ship, you can meet in a dance club, you can meet for breakfast, you can meet on a tour, you can meet for lunch, you can do several meetings that are still meetings, and they're all happening very close together, as opposed to on land, where you might have to arrange it next week or a week or two later because of your busy schedules. It's such a great environment, you know, because of the fact that you can do multiple meets before, and you don't have the decision pressure.
Right, and that's another big factor, is there's not a lot of pressure. You're just meeting. You're not meeting to see if you're the one. You're not sizing people up the way it happens when you date someone, especially that you've been talking to online. Because as soon as you meet them, you're doing all this calculating in your head about whether or not you want to spend time with them, money on them. You know, it's really a calculating experience, and versus just a relaxed experience of just meeting someone that's traveling. You owe them anything. You don't feel like you have to learn, you know, you don't have to do anything, which it creates that organic environment for real romance to thrive, rather than this pressured, like, this is going to work. And, you know, it's much more heart than head. And I love that, because I really do feel like it's a, when you really fall in love, when there's that magic. The magic is partly because you're just going with your soul. You're not going with your mind as much. So it's really special.
And what happens? What happens though after the cruise? You know, people meet on the cruise. That's a magic environment. You know, and it's like, because I've met people on travels, and we had such a fabulous time traveling. Oh, we'll keep in touch. Yeah, you may for a few months, but then it kind of goes away, and you get back to normal life. How do people maintain the relationship from the cruise when they do get back to the real world?
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, that's definitely a whole different topic. It's difficult. It really is difficult. There's a lot of things that are difficult about it. You know, one of the things, people put way too much in geography. First of all, I don't, you're not a tree. One of you can leave, but.
Did you say geography? You cut out for a word there. I just want to make sure we got that.
Yes, geography is, okay. I said, people are geographically undesirable. I hate when people say that. I'm like, you know, if you're lucky enough to find someone that you really care about, mm-hmm. I really would put geography aside for a bit. Like,
yeah.
You know, and then I always recommend you try to fall in love with someone from your own country. It's much easier.
Well, that's a real criteria. No, but I mean, back in the old days, where, you know, marriages were pretty much arranged, or there, you know, before people traveled a lot, people would be born and die within 3 miles, you know, and your family
yeah.
knew their family, and you went to the same church, and you went to the same school,
right.
and you were high school sweethearts, and everybody knew everybody in small town America, and those marriages a lot of times worked out because everybody was so familiar because they had such a common experience. Now, you know, especially
uh-huh.
in San Francisco, you know, I'm seeing like Samoans dating Italians; they have nothing in common with
uh-huh.
each other. Yeah, but you
right,
know, it works
right.
because they're great people.
Well, they have something in common with each other, but not the obvious and not the,
yeah.
not the past,
yeah.
anyway,
yeah.
the past the way it used to be. Yeah, so I say there's several things that are, you know, difficult to overcome. And I do believe that, you know, you have to have, if it's a love relationship, different than a friendship, of course. A friendship, I think, is easy if there's just plan another trip together. That's how you stay
uh-huh.
in touch. That's not hard, but the romantic side of things gets very complicated. And one of the sides that people, you know, find out very quickly is that everybody has a little bit different vacation persona, and that's generally a lot more fun than their regular persona, you know? So, you know, you have that to contend with, and then usually there's logistical hurdles to overcome because of the fact that usually you're not from the same place. So there's that. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is that you both really need to want to be in a relationship together, and you want to overcome these hurdles, and you are very committed to, you know, making, I would say, a monogamous and committed choice as soon as possible, so that you guys can really focus on making it work rather than what might make it not work. So I think those are important things. And, you know, just understand there are going to be hurdles. I mean, it's not going to be as magical as when you fall in love. And that's okay. That's just another part. You know, there's seasons of our lives. We're babies. We're excited. We're interested. Then we become teenagers, and we are like sucking up life, and then, you know, we fall in love, and we do other things, and we travel, and then I think a lot of us become like kind of looking back, like, oh wow, I missed that, I wish I could have do that, and here's another.
I'm doing all that.
And you become
the. Anything I think I missed, I'm catching
And then you're
up.
In the winter of your life. Like my father, my real father said something pretty profound once. He's 70, and. He was like, you know, I'm in the winter of my life, and you know, you have to like all the seasons, and you just have to understand you're in that season. And so you can't compare the winter to the summer. It's not the same season. You're not going to stay in the summer. You're in the winter now. So you have to be okay with the season that you're in. And that same thing applies to relationships. You're in the courtship is a different season than making it work and, you know, deciding to really commit and building a life together. That's a different season of life, you know, being 10 years, 20 years married, a different season. It's just a different season. So to look at these seasons for what they are and not try to compare them to what they were is, I think, a very important part of taking a romance from land, from sea to land. It's a different season. So anyway, I've met many, many people that have made it work, and hundreds of love connections, and I always like to tell one of my favorite ones about Oksana and Chris, who met on Halloween, on my Halloween hosted Zinkle sailing, and then they were engaged by New Year's and married by Valentine's Day. And
wow.
They've been married like, what's it, 3 or 4 years now. They came to the house a couple months back. So nice to reconnect. I definitely was not on board with him pushing that fast, but they made it work. So I'm happy for them both, of course. But yeah, that's one of my fun success stories. Another one, oh, she's so fun. In fact, we were just planning her and her family's travel. She met Amber and Scotty met, and they were very different people. Like Scotty is way more reserved, in at least to the masses. I think in private he's a lot more like wild, but Amber's crazy fun. And anyway, the two of them met, hit it off right away, and now they have 3 kids, one of which was a total surprise. And she's just the most fun. So they have 3 children. They've been together at least a decade, and they went through a lot of growing pains too, because she was from Idaho and he was living like in Manhattan or something, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's
a little
really,
bit of a
really
difference.
Right, and she loved Idaho. It wasn't like she was one of those people that really wanted to move out to the city. She was much more of salt of the earth, like very, very, like, you know, kind of like every good country song girl. And
I think John Denver.
And it was salt.
Thank God, yeah, I'm a country boy. I'm thinking myself in my head here. Well, let me ask you a question, because Josie's going to join us here in a couple of minutes.
I got to run too.
Okay. Well, do you have time for a question, or do you want to do it next week?
Yeah, I'll take one question. It's just that we have 2 calls going on. I don't want to disturb my husband.
Well,
has
we don't
another
do that.
Call.
Tell me. When you see people in love on a cruise ship and they fall in love, do you see actual physical changes? Do they become like different people? Is it clear that they're in love? Can you actually see it in their faces and everything and see some actual changes in people?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. The eyes, for sure. The mannerisms, the facial expressions, the way they walk, all the old like cliche things about what people do when they like someone, touching their hair, leaning into each other, it's just very, very clear. And I also feel like there's an aura, like I gravitate towards, there has to be a different vibration or something, because I gravitate towards it. Like I don't pay attention to the outside world a lot. I'm usually very tunnel visioned in my mission of what I have to do. I'm very focused in that way. And I'm not gossipy. I just don't look around. I'm more of like, I look at what I got to do. But when someone's in love, I see it right away. I find like my eyes gravitate towards it, my intrigue, because I just love love. I just love watching love transpire. It's just such a magical, fun, exciting thing. I hope everybody gets to feel it, you know, at some point or another. It's a real gift.
I would tell. Oh, that's beautiful. I would also tell your producers that you love love. I mean, that is probably the. You did say that. That.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you did. Oh, you've already. Okay. Yeah. Because I picked up on that immediately.
Yeah. Something about love, and I said, "Gosh," I said, "I love love." I said something to this effect. I said, "You know, it's like, it's something I really hope everybody experiences. The kind of love that, like, they would die for you. That's what I have with Joel, and it's a." It's really special, and you know, it's not. I just want to give everyone the opportunity to feel that way and to have that crazy experience, which just so it feels like a movie when something like that happens on board. It's so outrageously miraculous. It just feels like a miracle. It's so cool. It's a cool, cool thing. I hope everybody gets to feel it.
Yeah. So you're not the cruise director. You're the love coach. or you're the love director. I don't want to say director because the people are involved, but yeah, just, you know, you give yourself your own title. Love coach. Love coach Julie.
They actually asked me if I was a matchmaker, and I said, you know, the only thing I don't love that word, that phrase, because I always think of a millionaire matchmaker, and she, not that she did anything wrong, but she's just very forceful. And I
Oh yeah, a little bit. I think I saw a couple of episodes. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I like to create the environment for true love to transpire, but I don't like to be the one trying to force something. I want it to be natural and organic and be their choice and their discovery. Yeah, I want to put them in the place where they find each other. I don't have to be the one to introduce them. You know what I mean? So it was a little different. I told her I was the cruise director love connection. I'm the connect connector.
Oh, well, that's it. Cruise director love connector. I want you to put that on a business card. Cruise director
anyway,
love connector. Just do it like a slash in between, you know, but
yeah.
Anyway, I know you have to go. So.
Yeah. It was so nice talking with you though. And,
nice talking to you too.
I'll talk to you next week. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye-bye. The love boat.
Bye, Shelby. So we got it all here. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, we talk politics, we talk love boat connections. We just you never know. And then we got Josie coming up right now. So let's get to her. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. Hola, chica. Good to see you last night.
Hola. Dobre utra. Привет. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, in any language.
Hola,
I'm fine.
Hola, Josie. Hola.
Bianchi's
here, hola, too. Hola, chico. ¿Qué pasa? Hola, Bianchi. Great time last night, Gray, at the Wahoo Stadium.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
and
we got extra time today. I should make an announcement. Next week, Dr. Peter Pry is going to start on Tuesdays. We're going to have Mondays pretty much freed up for Mama B, me, and working on bills and activism and guests and who knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're going to be changing, I think, our days to 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. We're going to start to advance things going along. So for your report, you know, like I said, it's going to be a little more compressed, but you're always welcome to call anytime with anything that we miss at different hours and things like that, which you do anyway, which
sure.
is great. So last night, that was incredible.
We have fun. Yes, that was good.
Yeah. For those that don't know, there was a presentation of The Awakening, which is a film by Black conservatives about Black conservatives and the betrayal of the Democrat Party. And it was great because Mama B was there. She was in the movie. Also, Jerome Bell, who we've had on the show, I think two, maybe three times, was there, a real friend of the show, running for Congress in Virginia, who's actually running citizen legislation. We got to meet Colonel, I can't remember his name, Wimbish, there we go, who was on the show yesterday also with Mama B, who was there last night, who looked strikingly like Colonel Alan West, and a lot of people mistook him for Colonel West at first.
He looked like him.
He looks just like him. It's just, you know, they could be brothers. You could line them up together and say, hey, you know, you guys. You know. But
he
it's interesting that.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to connect the two of them too, because Colonel Wimbush is Army. He's Green Beret Army, and Jerome Bell is Chief Petty Navy. And so you've got two Black conservative veterans running in two different parts of the country who have both taken citizen legislation from us as part of their platform. So it's really things are happening now that that are quite amazing. And so I'm just kind of like the saying goes, you know, let go and let God. And so I'm along for the ride at this point. You know, I've done the basic stuff. So from what happens on from here, there's so many people involved with this. And that includes you. You've been with me since WEBY. You know, this is 5 years now that we've been talking.
Beginning. When you first moved here, yeah.
Yep.
And we had Mayra Jolie. She's from Dominican Republic. She was the cutest thing last night.
Oh, gosh, she's gorgeous. That woman is stunningly beautiful. We're talking model quality here. You know, she was amazing.
Yeah. She looked like a model.
Yeah.
she's
an immigration lawyer. And we're getting her on the show here.
I'm like, what? Where are you from? Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
She's cute. No, I'm saying we started talking in Spanish. I didn't know she spoke Spanish. I know she had an accent there, but I didn't know. But Alan West was excellent in the video. Alida King was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Classic was excellent. I mean, gosh, the best. And C.L. Bryan, the best.
Yeah, see, some of those people I didn't know. Some I did, but the more public ones I knew, but some of the ones I didn't. I mean, Alveda King, I really want to talk to her. She's brilliant. She is amazing.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to get her on the show.
And I was impressed with Adrian Jones, a young black man, very, very knowledgeable about God, and he was very good. And the other young woman that I really like, Amanda McGee, she was very, very nice, the youngest black on the screen, you know. And I bought the movie, so I'm going to be playing it at my store for people to see that, hey, not all black people hate Donald Trump. They love Donald Trump. Like Alvita King, she told me.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
So I was like, what? What are you talking about? Pray for him, she goes.
Well, let's get a quick comment from Bianchi, because this is one of the, I think, one of the most important developments in our country today to save it is rising black conservatism. I mean, this is critical to putting the Democrat Party
by
back
Bianchi?
Where they should be, in obsolescence or, you know. So, Bianchi, have you seen the film? Do you know what we're talking about? The Awakening?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds very interesting. And it does portray a lot of people, quote unquote, who finally come out in the open, even though they face ridicule and scorn.
Yeah,
well, it's interesting.
See,
yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
When a black person says, "I'm a Republican, I stand with Donald Trump," it's like, oh my God, they have to say it quietly, because if not, the rest of their folks, they hate them. They don't want to know about that person. They distance themselves. And a lot of people were voting secretly for Donald Trump. But personally, I knew a lot of black folks, and they were afraid to come out. And I'm like, why? This is America.
The problem with the times we live in. You know, there is this. But, you know, if I were a black conservative, the idea that a bunch of white liberal, you know, old folks would tell me who I am and what I can do, you know, I don't like anybody telling me what I can do for any reason, you know, unless it really is justified and they're actually right. You know, and I'll judge that for myself. Mm-hmm. But just the idea that a bunch of white liberal, you know, arrogant elitists, you know, can direct the black population in this country at will for their own personal gain is obscene and always has been.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie?
I encourage people to get the video. And the video that I bought last night, it says Systematic Deception. It has an apple in the front and a snake. And he put a double video there, something special. He told me that gentleman traveled from Orlando to be with us last night. So he was selling all the videos. So he did pretty good, though. But I wanted to talk this morning about Bill Gates creating bio milk.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
This is sad, because I almost feel, if I wasn't so busy on my business, I would take a trip to the border with a truck and buy a lot of milk. They're probably giving it away free. I can act like an illegal back at the border because I speak Spanish. You know, I'm a Latina. I can put raggedy clothes.
You're being illegal? That would be hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, we still have to go to the border. I still want to take a trip there, but, you know, yeah.
And tell you one time how I got arrested at the border. They thought I was illegal. But anyway.
Oh, they did. I think you mentioned that once before.
Oh,
yeah.
That was funny. But I was only arrested for 10 men, and then they released me because they realized I was not illegal. But anyway, so I wish I can go to the border and get a lot of the milk for the real American people. And they're sending, huge pallets full of milk for the illegals. And then the American people cannot find milk. And this clown, Bill Gates, he's trying to push in his bio milk. I don't know what's in it. Not good. This is not good.
So is it plant-based?
Desperate moms are probably going to turn to the milk he's created, and he's selling it now. So
yeah.
This is horrible.
Well, you know what's scary?
These people are criminal.
Soy milk, for example, is full of plant estrogen. So for men in particular, I imagine it affects boys too. The last thing you want to give, you know, developing boy babies, you know, is estrogen. That's not a good thing in their system. So a soy-based thing, you know, it's okay when soy is fermented, you know, and that's good for you, you know, like soy sauce and things like that, but because it takes out the estrogens. But the idea that I'm wondering if people are making soy substitutes or almond milk or things like that, you know, in place of regular.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of the formula being shipped to the border is insane. You know, the fact that the government is buying it up. Didn't they close down one of the major plants, or is it doesn't it come mostly from China? So what happened? There was a baby formula plant that was closed down, or what happened with that?
Yeah.
I haven't looked into it yet.
They've been working on this for a long time to create chaos about shortage of food, shortage of milk for baby. It's all well planned, well organized, including all the shooting. It's well organized by the deep state. But breast milk, it's this color, the color in the milk now, and the moms breastfeeding the children, the vaccinated moms I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
It's the color is totally different. Some of the people are telling me, and, you know, I hear a lot of stories from the nurses.
Oh, really?
And the other thing is, and the other thing is the vaccinated people, how can they be given free blood? You know, I asked somebody the other day, what about donating blood? How do you going to know if this person is really vaccinated or not? And, you know, we're living in dangerous times. I don't want no contaminated blood from somebody vaccinated at all, because I don't want the vaccine. I don't want to be part of that. So this is criminal, and I'm sure a lot of this blood donation center, they're going to slip some of the contaminated blood. You know that.
Well, you know, we just had Joel Rudman on, and we just had Joel Rudman, who's a doctor in Navarre. So he's just south of us here. We're Josie and I are both in Milton. And this would be a great bill for him to do. So if you want to talk to him about that, to have a separate blood supply and separate health care for people, so that we're not subject to spike proteins, we're not subject to vaccine injured blood. I don't want that in my system. I would do what the Jehovah's Witnesses do. I would donate my own blood to me. You know, if I knew I had a scheduled operation coming up, and I don't know how many pints it would need, but I would insist that it be screened for spike proteins. Now, do you know, is there a test? You talk to doctors all the time. Is there a test that people can use, that doctors can use before they give blood in a transfusion to make sure it's, or to see if it's non-vaccinated or has a very low level of spike proteins? Are there any tests for this now?
I'm not sure, but I can ask, because I talk to nurses and doctors daily. I can ask.
Oh, I know. That's why I wanted to ask you. Yeah. Yeah. Let's find out.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that early on.
The information center for any little thing like that, it's at my store. I hear stories daily.
Yeah, you're like the barber to the politicians.
Yeah, I am.
This is great. If you want to know what the doctors and nurses are thinking, talk to Josie. She knows. Do you want to give a plug for your store? I don't know if you've ever done that, but you're certainly welcome to every time you come on.
At Ruth Uniform Shop on Olive Road and Davis Highway.
There you go.
And the other thing I wanted to talk about this morning is Ron Paul. He blocked the $40 billion going to Ukraine. He is requesting an amendment to be exposed. Like, he wants to see the bill, where the money is going, exactly where the funds are going to be. And they're not producing that yet. So he blocked the $40 billion for right now, which is, I love it.
Yep. I think you mean Rand Paul. Rand Paul is the senator. Ron Paul is his father, who was a member of Congress for years and years, and has the Ron Paul Center. Rand Paul, R-A-N-D, Rand Paul.
The young one.
Yeah, he's the senator. Well, here's what's interesting about that. We actually have a bill. In fact, it seems we have a bill for almost everything at this point now. We've got a lot of things covered.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a bill that I wrote which requires a 30-day comment period once a budget bill is in its final form if it's going to spend more than $100 million. Now, that's a pretty low threshold, so there might be a lot of spending bills that they'd be out there. But in other words, it requires it. And, it, you know, neither war nor pandemic nor national debt nor end of government funding gets in the way of this. I mean, I put all the exclusions I could think of into it. So it requires that no matter what the budget bill, you know, that once it's in its final form, it's been through the House, it's been through the Senate, and they're ready to vote on final passage, they're done. Before that happens, it has to go to the public for a 30-day comment period. And if they change anything on it, when it comes back, it goes for another 30-day comment period. But that's one of our bills. It's in my 25 bills. In fact, I sent all those bills to Mama B. So she's got our package of 25, good, which includes Pianchi's bill on separate federal and state ballots, includes your bill on voter ID, it includes my bills on stuff, it includes Jonathan Mosley's bill on his liquidity corporation to handle the coming bankruptcies when the COVID money runs out. We've got Dr. Peter Pry's bill on EMP protection. We've got different bills by different people. And we've got Dr. Mm-hmm. Zelenko's bill on the emergency use authorization reform. And so I specifically picked bills that I didn't write, you know, just because I wanted to get a broader cross-section. So your bills are in there. Besides, your bills are great. And so those are in there, too. So Mama B has those as well. And what I'm hoping to do with her is because she knows so many people. What a fascinating person.
She does.
And yeah. And mm-hmm. so we're gonna dedicate pretty much all of Monday to I've got hopefully 2 hours with her, and then the extra hour if we want it, or I'll do other stuff, or we might have guests. We'll see. We don't know what's going to happen, but to be able to work on these bills, talk about these bills, present them to major political figures, you know, and be able to present them is going to be huge.
Yeah, because she's probably going to take action on this, because you know I have given my bill to Mike Flynn personally. He put it right on his jacket inside his pocket. I mm-hmm. gave it to Cindy Powell in her hands because I was eating dinner with her.
Yep.
I gave it to Len Wood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I gave it to Hannity when we were here in one of the rallies, remember, with Ron DeSantis, you and me?
Oh, yeah, that's where I met Mama B. We did a video with her, and she hates it because the lighting was bad.
Oh, yeah.
We did a video. I didn't know who she was, right? So I was
cool.
with Donnie West,
cool.
who was the liberal of our
uh-huh.
group, and I was the conservative. And we were just making
Donnie, yeah.
videos. Oh, Donnie was great. Yeah, we did videos out back of the fish house.
Yeah.
And this is in Pensacola, and it was pouring rain. And so we're making this video. We
uh-huh.
we did three of them that day before the rally started. So we're out back, we're chatting away, and there's this woman looking at us, and she, Mama B is about, she's about, I guess, 5'1", black woman, you know, great, you know, just dominant. She's one of those folks that, you know, despite her height, she has a huge stature. And I'm looking at this woman, she's looking at us, and commenting like she, and I don't think she realized we're on a video. So I invited her to do the next video with us. So she sits down. You know, so you got these two white guys, 6 foot white guys, and you got Mama B in between us, and we're making this video. And of course, like I said, the lighting's terrible. We all look bad. It's pouring rain all around us, and it was noisy. But we had a great conversation, and then we didn't really contact it for 4 years, and then we bumped into each other because of Patty Burke, who's doing the work with this show, The Awakening, which Mama B's in. So you know. And
uh-huh.
This is definitely God ordained. I mean, the idea
cool.
that we're all coming together,
mm-hmm.
the way we're coming together, is unbelievable. And so from the folks that she knows and her action and her political action to the ideas that we generate here with you, Pianchi, all the other folks that write bills,
mm-hmm.
Something amazing is happening
yeah.
right now. And so it's incredible. But anyway, let's get back to Rand Paul and the $40 billion budget buster.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that, and it is time for the Republicans to stand for us taxpayers, because all this is our money and the future of our children's money that
mm-hmm.
they're giving away, because all this money is going to go and come back in their pockets. They're only giving
yep.
a small little percentage to Ukraine. These people are crooks, criminals. They've been doing this for years and years and years. We did not know anything about it. That's why Maxine Waters goes in as a House representative. All of a sudden, she has $2 million mansion. How do you do that? And all these other crooks. And they stay in office for years and years and years until they kick the bucket, because they cheat and they cheat and they cheat. And this is going to stop. And John Durham, he started yesterday. He headed to court. They're choosing all the people involved,
the jurors. They're doing jury selection.
That's
what's going on.
Yes, he's got all the evidence, and we mm-hmm. know a lot about this, what's going on. And it's going to be like a hurricane coming. And that's why they're putting Johnny Depp all over Twitter, all over Facebook, all over with his court hearing and all. It's like a big joke. To distract people's mind, the shooting and everything is to distract people's mind. These people are criminal, evil, wicked ones, and it is time to stop them. And
yeah.
it will happen, let me tell you. I remember when Donald Trump says, and you will be arrested, he told Hillary, and she will be arrested.
Well, I hope so.
You about that.
See, my problem with Durham, though, is it's taking too long. He should have had his results out. I mean, how long does it take to sit Hillary down, put her under oath, and if the results come out that are good, but he's been doing this 6 years.
I'm going to tell you one more time. You're in plan B and I'm in plan A. We know it's taken this long for a reason. And when everything comes up, you're going to say, you were right, Josie, because we know why it's taken this long. Okay?
See, I disagree. So I think the cost is too high. But this is where we disagree. And listen, we have an honest disagreement. There's no problem with that. Do you think that the $40 billion? Yeah, that's okay. Do you think the $40 billion for Ukraine? I think of it as a money laundering operation for the Democrat Party. Would that be a fair characterization?
Yes, it is, because Putin has frozen all their accounts in Russia, and they have a lot of investments in Russia, and he froze all their accounts in Russia, and I believe he has his hand in all the money in the Ukraine, also Putin, and these people don't have no money. So they have to pay themselves. This is exactly what's going on. But the American people, we're helping the Ukraine. No, you're not helping the Ukraine. No, that money's coming back for the criminals. And it's, like I said, it's been going on for years and years. You send $56 million to Honduras. They give them $10 million. The rest comes in their pocket. Oh, yeah. It's been going on for years. But they're going to be exposed 100% with everything. Everything. Child trafficking, money laundering, voting fraud, the whole thing, the killings, everything is going to be on the table. The Democrats, they did not know how much, before Donald Trump left, he declassified everything, and they still believe that it wasn't, but it is. So they're in for a treat. And Greg,
well,
I
if it's declassified, hold on a second. Oh, you have to go, did you say? Oh.
He declassified everything, yes.
Yeah, see, that's what I want to find out about, because if it's declassified, then everybody knows, because it's declassified. You know, people can report on it, they can study it, the historians get it. I mean, declassification is incredibly important to our republic, to document our republic, you know, and see what happened. So declassification is really important. So I don't know how that would ever be hidden. It's the classified stuff that's hidden. The declassified is not. But I'm not sure. I think Donald Trump, from what I heard, though, he didn't declassify anywhere near as much as he could have and should have. That was part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about that?
I got 2 minutes to make it. I have a test here at the hospital. I have a little bit of pain on my ribs. So
you don't have to go into too many personal details if you don't want to, but that's okay. We'll wish you well.
No, biggie.
Okay, good.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon. If I have time, if I finish on time, I'll call you back. Okay?
Okay, sounds good. We have another hour. Yeah, God bless you too.
Okay, ciao. Like they say in Russia, paka, meaning goodbye, paka.
Do svidaniya.
Bye.
Ciao.
Do svidaniya, ciao. Adios.
Oh, the fun we have here. All right, tell you what, I've got a few minutes. I've got a caller, new caller in line, but I've got to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for today. And then, Pianca, you have a comment before I do that? And then we'll get back. We have the rest of the hours open.
Great information so far today.
This is a wild show. Things I get the feeling that things are happening faster. It seems like we've shifted gears. We're now in third heading for fourth, And once we hit fourth gear, we start getting some major political folks on the show. We'll be headed for fifth. So it should be interesting how this is all working out, fifth gear. But it seems like things are happening faster. Make sense?
Well, everyone seemingly, a lot of the society has been very lax. And all of a sudden, now they're seeing what's going on and they're tired of it. So they have to react, have to make changes, have to put their foot down, as said in some societies.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, you know what? I goofed. Cindy's on this hour. I forgot to ask her to call in. That's whose phone number I have right here. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to hold off. Let's get Cindy for half an hour. I'll take a break at the bottom of that time. And then we'll get our Santa Rosa Volunteers, all the things I'm supposed to play that we haven't really touched today because he's been so busy. Hey, good thing I log everybody's number so I know who's calling. I totally forgotten, Cindy. I just, because I know you can't make it tomorrow. So let's get to your, in fact, wait a minute. I got a theme for you. Don't go away. I can do this properly. She's laughing at me. Great. This is probably a good reaction. Hang on. Don't go away. All right, here we go.
Informed consent, the ability to receive the truth for your medical care, and the ability to consent freely to any medical procedure, or not, based on the truthful information received, has completely disappeared in this era of medical, big government, big tech, big pharma, fascism. There are many warriors coming forward to try and keep your medical freedom. This is so you won't be forced to ever wear a mask, and you won't be forced through a government mandate to inject your body with a dangerous experimental gene therapy purposely and deceitfully called a vaccine. Medical freedom is when you aren't forced into anything that violates your individual rights. Join us now as one of those warriors of medical freedom talks about the latest victories and the struggles yet to be won. Join us now for the Medical Freedom Report with Cindy Cagle. Hey, and how about that show last night? We were just talking to Jake. It's an action radio group. We got together. We're one big happy family, you know, across the country. But there's a bunch of us here in the Milton, Pensacola area, the Gulf Coast of Florida. Yeah, what'd you think?
I loved it. I prayed that we had a bigger attendance, especially from the black community. But the information was right on, and I can't wait for it to be public so that we can get it out to the masses.
Well, I don't know how much the event was publicized. I know they were talking about it being shown on Newsmax, you know, Sunday, so that's going to get a huge audience. But how much was it really publicized around here?
You know, I don't know. And I know that security was a huge concern, so that was an obstacle for, well, the Black Lives Matter movement is certainly not going to be a fan of it.
Isn't that fascinating? Black Lives Matter doesn't matter when Black Lives are conservative. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. How does that work out? Oh, but
yeah, there's a lot of that defies their logic. But I know that was a concern. So, you know, now the job is to, you know, get it to as many people we can to get the truth out there, because that seems to be their mission is to keep both sides or keep one side of the information under wraps so that the other side can only be the information known.
Yeah. The problem is the old preaching to the choir syndrome. And the folks that came last night already believe in black conservatives.
Yeah, we're already
and
there.
And either are black conservatives or support black conservatives, like we do here at Action Radio. The people that watch 2,000 Mules, who already know that there's vote fraud, who already know the ballots are being stuffed, are watching it. So it's like confirmation. We're not the people that need to see it. The people that need to learn about black conservatives are black liberals. The people that need to learn about vote fraud are those that think Brandon's actually the president when he's not.
Right.
You know, so the biggest problem I think we face is getting out, you know, from under what we do to as many people as possible. This is why it's interesting having Shelby, when she disagreed with me on some of the COVID things we talked about. She says, well, most people don't feel that way. Well, I don't really care how they feel. I'm dealing in truth. And the truth is we've all been lied to. The COVID's a hoax.
And they don't
virus,
feel that
COVID,
way
the
because
government
they're not
response
informed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When you suppress half the information, there's no other answer to come to. There's no other belief to come to. Mm-hmm. That's the unfair advantage that they have. And it's removing everyone's ability to make informed decisions.
Yeah, you can't, you know, if you only give information which leads you to a particular conclusion, don't be surprised when people get that conclusion, because there's no other choice based on the evidence that people are presented with. Well, that's the idea. This is why it's so important to get rid of big tech censorship. You know, with the Elon Musk thing, everybody said, oh, no, if he doesn't buy Twitter, what's going to happen? Well, I've got a bill that for free would clean up all of big tech. You know, I changed four lines in the U.S. federal code. Four lines.
Yes.
That's it.
And we
make liability conditional.
Need it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But we have people on board, though. You know, Mama B loves that bill. Colonel Winship Wimdish, excuse me. I'm going to get his name wrong for a while.
Wimbish.
Colonel Wimbish, who looks just like Alan West. You know,
yes,
the same height,
I thought
stature.
The entire evening he was Alan West.
That's hysterical. No, I'll tell you what, I shook his hand. That guy's got a grip. He's still a Green Beret. You know, he's 70, but he could kick just about anybody.
He looks amazing.
He was a great, oh, no, he was incredible, yeah. And yeah. He's got a voice on him, too. He's singing the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
So I've got Colonel Winship connected with Jerome Bell, who's the Navy Chief Petty Officer for years.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. Well, so they're hopefully going to work it. Look at, I mean, you know, you've got two black conservative veterans who love citizen legislation. How can I not
and
get them connected?
And he was, Jerome Bell was part of systematic
yep.
deception, wasn't he?
He was on the film last night. Absolutely. Yeah. So I got to contact him after the show. Say, nice job. I saw your movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, he'll be back. He'll definitely be back. Let's bring Bianca in. Bianca, do you want to comment on any of this before we get started into other issues and things? He's thinking.
Did we lose Bianca?
No, he said he just mutes himself.
You know,
he's probably
I lost
drinking
my
coffee
screen
right now.
For a second, but.
Ah!
No,
welcome back.
I'm
were
sorry
you aware
that,
of that film?
Yes. How are you doing? I'm sorry
good.
There wasn't a bigger attendance from that segment of the population, but the show must go on.
Absolutely, and that's the start of giving people the information. Now it's out, and we can talk about it and encourage people to watch it.
Well, what is going on that that I guess this almost like willingness to be victimized, this willingness to, because if black folks didn't want to be, you know, part of a victim group, it wouldn't happen. You can't force people to be victims, you know, and the fact that we have separate
group
black
think.
Conservatives for saying not to. What's that now?
Group think.
Yeah. I mean, is this
we
all
are
conditioned?
A society of group think.
Okay. Yeah. Feel free. Elaborate.
I feel like, you know, it's a bunch of little catchy phrases, but they really do mean a lot. Nobody wants to be on a losing team. It's a lot of work to be on the opposing team, and it's easier to go along and get along.
Yeah, I've never wanted to do that. Probably because I've been on the outs so much myself. I've always been the minority of one, you know, the only, you know, Australian Canadian in a school of Americans because I'm used to being alone.
Yeah.
For me, it was no big deal. So I come by it naturally, but I can understand the groupthink. There's a certain, although it was tougher at the time, there's a certain advantage to not being either dependent or part of a lot of different groups. But what is it, Bianca?
Yeah, it can be
help
a very lonely place.
I had my moments. That's why I flew airplanes, played music, and,
overachieved.
You know, there's always a way out. Yeah.
No, I do. I think it is. It's much more, everybody wants to feel part of something. And when you're on the other side and the numbers look so big, on the other side, it can be very discouraging and very lonely. And, I think it takes a certain personality to accept that and push through it. And not everybody can.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that, but even so, as someone who was, you know, forced individuality and you know, massive discrimination on a huge scale against, you know, me being, and so much for immigrants, right? But the point was I joined groups. I mean, I was in the theater, I did music, I did drama stuff. I found a group of nonconformists such as myself. In fact, I think we formed our own nonconformist group in high school because we didn't care.
That's
so we took all the radicals.
Yeah,
we took all the radicals, the mavericks. So we took the people that were all individuals and we put us in a group. It was really kind of fun. So, I mean, there's always a way. There's always a way to deal with things like that. Yeah.
Well, and I all think right, now it's actually a little easier to be an independent thinker. It's just harder to get more people to join you. I think when I was growing up, it was harder to be maybe an outsider. And while it's definitely a losing or seems to be a losing team right now, you're not so, I think, ostracized or looked down on as much as you would have been, you know, a generation ago. It's much more accepted to be different, independent, I don't know, just a free thinker. It's just getting the other people to do the same seems to be a huge obstacle.
Well, people are afraid to be different. You know, like I said, when
yeah.
it's forced upon you, it's easier. It makes you kind of fearless. And once you get over your fear of being different, then you turn it into an advantage. You know, this whole show is based on being different, thinking differently, acting differently, and doing things that no one ever has done before. But something happened last night that was interesting. I'll get Pianki's take on this too, that one of our organizers of the event last night perpetuated the myth that Black Americans have been more subject to COVID than other groups. And that's just fucking nonsense. We heard about that from Brian Artis. Yeah,
Dr.
tell me more
Artis,
about that. What,
yeah,
go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was sorry we didn't get to talk about that. And I'm not completely schooled up on it. But, yeah, after our conversation with Dr. Artis, because that's the misconception I had as well. Now, I did talk further with a doctor about it, and he said that the Black community, because they have higher instances of diabetes, that they can be in larger numbers impacted, but it's because of a underlying health condition. It's not COVID.
Yeah. So it's not being Black that makes a difference. It's being diabetic.
Right.
And we should talk about that too, because, you know, all the white diabetics, Asian diabetics, Jewish, Christian, Hindu diabetics, well, probably not Hindu, different diet. No, I'm just teasing. You know, but point being that, you know, and I don't like, sometimes I feel like we talk too much about race because, you know, there's so many other factors. But the fact is, if you're healthier, you know, that this isn't going to be a problem, that we really just focus on basic health. We had Joel Rudman on earlier. He's got a family practice in Navarre, and we were talking about this, and he's dead against the mandates. He knows that masks don't work. He was talking about in his practice says, take your damn mask off. you're in a room with a bunch of doctors. You know, we can't look at you with your mask on, so just relax.
Yeah.
You know, but people are so conditioned. You know, and you wonder if well, I'll get Pianki on this too, that you know, a certain percentage of the Black population is absolutely conditioned to victimhood. A bunch of the white population is probably, you know, especially the elitist liberal whites they have their own conditioning that they're supposed to run the world for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and those of us who are independent conservatives, you know, of every description, are like, what the hell are you talking about? You're not the natural.
Are the problem children?
Exactly. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, and it's sad, and it's another way the Black population is being manipulated.
Yeah, and I just wish we had more folks who would stand up and scream about this. I don't know if we have Black entertainment television. Let me ask Pianki, is there ever and we have like the Spanish news, Innovision or whatever it's called, that Jorge Ramos. I think he does that. He lies about the United States, you know, in Spanish. Is there, for lack of a better term, is there Black news? Are there news stations?
Yeah,
or
there's several, but they are very, very biased, like Black Network News.
Okay.
The adjectives of white and black as descriptions for the individual is widely used.
Huh.
White man shoots, you know, just like this Brooklyn person who is mentally ill made reference on how he was a white supremacist. But, you know, there was an incident, it wasn't in Florida.
You mean Buffalo?
Where a shooter went into
the Buffalo shooter?
Nightclub. Yeah, and he told the blacks that they could leave. You remember that one?
That wasn't the Orlando one, because Orlando, I think, was a predominantly gay club, if I remember. But I could be wrong on that.
It was an incident where the shooter was, and people was hiding in freezers and hiding, and he knocked on the door and said, if you're black, you can leave because you suffered enough. And then you had this thing in Brooklyn.
Was
you
the murderer black?
In Brooklyn where he supposedly was seeking out blacks to shoot. So, you know, my point on the story is that you got ignorant people that's sick, that just does these things.
Well, so here's something too. Go ahead, Cindy.
I was just going to say, so the black news outlets are pushing the the whites are supremacists and blacks are oppressed narrative?
Yes, it is. They do.
So I guess we need the CBN, the Conservative Black News Network, CBNN.
Yeah, really.
You know, I mean, I hate to segregate, but it's almost that would be huge, you know, and you can just see the left going crazy. You know, I'd love to see them call it a racist network. But, you know, Candace Owens anchoring the evening, you know, Black conservative news, just to give a different perspective. I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting concept to think about. But, you know, as much as I hate the segregation that as we keep grouping people, would that in this particular case be something that I wouldn't want under normal circumstances, but because we have such extraordinary racist circumstances and victimization conditioning, would it be worth it to have Black conservative news? There's a thought.
And why isn't there more?
Well, news should be news. News should, if it should affect Americans pretty much equally. Now, if different people are affected, different individuals, things like that. You know, obviously you don't talk about tornadoes in places that don't get tornadoes. You know, well, there are no tornadoes in New York today. Okay, well, that's nice. They don't get them. You know, they're in Kansas. I mean, I watched The Wizard of Oz. So you want to do things that are relevant.
But that's the same question I have about this big tech censorship stuff.
Okay.
Why? Because we have, you know, very wealthy, prominent conservatives. Why is it that the progressive left is able to run everything, run all of our social media sites? Where is the counterpart from the conservative thinking elite?
That's
why
a really
are
good
they
question.
Not, yeah. Why are they not doing the same thing from the other side?
No, I wondered the same thing myself. You know, how did the Dorseys, you know, and the other folks end up owning Twitter? How did Zuckerberg get to run Facebook? Unless now Facebook is rumored to have started from a CIA program called LifeLog. I don't know if you heard about that, but the CIA wanted to track everybody's life, and they wanted to find a way to do it. And the best way to do it is let people do it themselves. So they created Facebook and put Zuckerberg in charge because they figured he was enough of a manipulatable Marxist. Yeah. Look up LifeLog. LifeLog. And so now they have people do it. I felt the same way about Ancestry.com. If you wanted to collect DNA on the entire population, what better way to do it than to tell people you're going to tell them their ancestors?
Yeah.
And then send it off to the government. Okay, this is why I haven't done Ancestry or any of those other, you know, 23andMe or whatever chromosome things it is. You know, I don't do that. I'd love to know what they have to say about my ancestry, but I'm not crazy about shipping my DNA, you know, off to the government, unless, of course, it's routinely done by doctors anyway. Oh, there's a thought for you. Do you know anything about that, being in the medical freedom biz?
Is our DNA
cataloged and sent to the government?
I've watched these, you know, these crazy documentaries or crime shows, and it's amazing how – and you don't think about it because it seems so innocent at the time, but I've heard or watched programs about relatives – who have been discovered as being a murderer or something, which in that sense it's a good thing, but they were able to find that person through, you know, seemingly innocent actions taken by citizens. It was used by sources that you had no idea had access to it to, you know, kind of investigate every aspect of your life. And in the wrong hands, it's not right.
Well, I also go by the theory that they have so much information, nobody could possibly read it all. So they have to be able to select it, but they have the information anyway. You know, so this is why they want to register guns so they can ultimately confiscate them one day. But I think there's a big problem. If you want to look into medical freedom, DNA tracking from some of these ancestry genealogy sites might be something interesting for you guys to look into.
Yeah, that's why I've said I have watched shows where they have used those very 23andMe data banks to solve crimes.
Well, we like the crimes being solved, but
it's just in the wrong hands, you know. And I'm sure at the time the jack wagon that provided his DNA to 23andMe had no idea that it could be used to, you know, one day solve a crime and put him behind bars.
Well, and also you can take similar DNA. So if they find DNA that's like, you know, 80 or 90% similar, it's probably either a fraternal twin or a sibling.
Yeah.
You can go, oh, well, this is close enough to this, you know, DNA for, you know, for a crime. Let's take a look at the rest of the family. You know, I mean,
and actually,
I don't know.
I think that's how it happened. It was a sister who had gone through the process of, you know, doing her family tree, and it was a brother that ended up being a murderer who, you know, just through the sister's quest, he was found to be the murderer.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting, though?
Think of that.
Go ahead, Bianchi. That's very much.
You know, there's ways, the technology exists, probably it's not readily known, that if wherever you've been within the last certain amount of time, there's a roar that's projected off your body that contains all your information, your DNA and everything else. And you don't have to touch anything, just your presence there. So,
my pheromones.
This technology.
Am I leaving pheromones everywhere in every bar I go to? I mean, what's going on here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was listening to a TED Talk, and an astrophysicist was on there talking, and they made mention of these fingerprints, these digital fingerprints that you don't have to touch anything, but wherever you go, you leave it. Now, it dissipates after a period of time, the energy, but it's present.
Wow.
Well, yeah, when people walk by you, if they have cheap cologne or really awful perfume, you know, they leave a trail. So why wouldn't your body leave a trail of all the things that you're casting off? You could be casting off spike protein stuff. You could be casting off all kinds of stuff. But everybody has an aroma, you know, and you can tell people walking by, you know, you can you know, smell it, you know, whatever it is, both good and bad. And so why wouldn't there be a genetic trail? I mean, those, you know, what makes up your nose olfactory organ smell centers? You know, and so why wouldn't the same thing be applied to genes or anything else as we walk through this world, creating a wind?
Well, many of those that were participating in riots with masks on, there's technology to see through those masks and see who you are.
If you want to. I'll tell you something that's interesting that I found fascinating. I have heard tell that a lot of these folks on these ancestry sites, because they list siblings, there's a lot of people that find they have stepbrothers and sisters they didn't know about. It's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, so, for wayward parents out there that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, or like, you know, dads are finding out they're not the parent of the kid they thought they were. But, you know, there's a famous case in England where there's a woman that, you know, was with, shall we say, a few guys. And then when she got pregnant, picked the wealthiest one, named him the father because she figured she'd get the most money out of it. That's an extreme case. That's disgusting. But the thing is, but should here's a question for you, medical freedom. Should DNA ancestry information be used to help you find more family members or in child custody or in paternity suits? What do you think? Has that been explored?
Wow. that's a heavy topic. Yeah.
You just think about it and call us next week. You know, it's okay. Or the week after. We got time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give that some thought and look into that.
Uh-huh. I think it's a big issue. I think it's going to come up, you know, more and more. You know, is it okay in court? You know, to say, well, to call in a step that didn't know they were a step. I said, well, this is your family. What do you mean this is my family? I don't know who these people are. Well, apparently your DNA is related. Oh.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think about the levels of, you hate to say destruction, but the damage that then can be done.
Oh, we're learning things from technology that we never suspected. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it all goes back to man being evil or nefarious, or because if you weren't doing the deed that, you know, you shouldn't have been doing, you wouldn't be in the situation you'd be in to be ousted.
But the left said in the 60s, free love, this is great. Everybody sleeps with everybody. It's going to be wonderful. We'll all be as one big world. What's the problem? I'm teasing you, obviously.
Yeah, it sounds good on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But the unintended consequence is, a generation of children that were not fathered responsibly.
That's one thing I find, the more I learn about the Bible and religion and what God really says as opposed to what the churches say God says. It's actually a much easier way to live your life. There's a few basic
rules
to follow, and it just makes your life so much simpler. And that's one thing that's probably not talked about anywhere near as much as it should be. And you can apply that to medical freedom, too. The things that you're free of. If you're high school sweethearts and you're each other's first person, chances of getting STDs or sexually transmitted diseases are pretty remote or almost impossible because you haven't been with anybody else. That's the idea.
Right.
That doesn't always happen, of course. But I'm just saying that that would be an easier way. If you marry your first person or, your virgins at marriage, there's an elimination of a problem. Now, I'm not casting moral judgments on other people.
No, it's just a reality.
But the reality is that's an easier solution.
The farther
you get away
from morals and, ethics and convictions, the more messy life becomes.
Mm-hmm. Don't steal, don't covet, the jealousy is out there, the things that you think you're due, all these different things. If you have a moral code, it just is such – now, I didn't really have a religious moral code. I just had a moral code, a pretty decent one. As I learned more and more, it would have been a lot simpler. I can buy this. This makes sense. Yeah,
and it doesn't even have – I mean, I'm not here to push my religious belief on anyone. It's like you said, it doesn't have to be a religious moral code. It just has to be, decent and respectful and as easy as do unto others as you would have them – do unto you and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
We are so far away from that as a society, and it complicates our lives. I see that more every day.
Yeah, something interesting to talk about, too. You should. You may want to join Wendy's report. Wendy's back for the Oh My God report. We call it the Christianity with a Kick. So this is where we deal with a lot of those issues. I'll tell you, who else I have to get back on the show is Chief Dan Skyhorse and the Creek Tribe Report, because we got a powwow coming up in Thanksgiving, and they haven't had one for a couple of years. I love the Creek Tribe powwow, so we got to get him back as well.
What is it?
Well, the powwow.
Creek
you know
Tribe?
About the Creek Tribe, the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe, yeah. Oh, this is...
Oh,
this
is that
Tommy
Nichols' father?
Tommy Nichols' dad. Uh-huh.
He's
the former chief. Chief Tom Nichols. They call him Blue Eyes. He actually has blue eyes. I think he's part Dutch. Which is interesting for a creek tribe member. Oh, yeah.
And what does he do? Something with Thanksgiving?
Well, they have a powwow. Actually, it's the weekend before Thanksgiving. And so Thanksgiving is not really thought of well by certain indigenous peoples as it becomes Indigenous Peoples Day. And we can talk about that, too. But the thing is, I miss it because there's a couple of folks that were friends of mine, particularly Chief Black Eagle, who's a Cherokee chief. And we'd get together and chat for, at least half an hour, 45 minutes. During powwow, just to sort of reconnect. He remembers me, which is great. He's like 80-something. In fact, the Creek theme was made for us. The Creek Tribe theme was made by a Creek chief who was actually singing in one of the sacred songs with the drum and the whole bit. And so I haven't played it for a while, and I won't until, Chief Dan gets back here. But that's something I want to get back on the show, too. And so there's some things that we kind of want to reconnect with here, which is interesting. Anyway, we have strayed totally away from your topic. Is there anything else in COVID we should know about? Any other? I know what I got a question to ask you. Go ahead, let's do this first. Then I got a theory I want to put to you. Go ahead.
I just wanted to remind everyone that's able to attend the Medical Freedom Rally this Friday at Blue Wahoo Stadium in Pensacola. Doors open at 6. Actually, I think doors open at 5:30. It starts at 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a great lineup of a lot of local speakers and actually speakers from around the U.S. that were, on the front lines with COVID offering information about prevention, about healthy living, and you know, the COVID then and now information.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. Is Brian Artis coming then, who was on our show last week?
He's going to be here for the continuing ed conference Thursday and half day Friday. And then there is a dinner Thursday night that he'll be at.
Yeah. Is there anything
but
new
he won't
in
be
COVID?
At the rally, unfortunately. He had to get home.
Yeah, and I can't afford the conference. It's kind of expensive. Someday, maybe next year, you know, once we have our first million listeners, but not this year. But that's something I've been working with for 2 years is the whole COVID government scam, because it is. Yes, it's a real virus, but that's where it ends. You know, of the million people who have died, I'm sure that 950,000 of them could have been saved with early treatments and proper knowledge. That's how bad this is. So this is a government pandemic. This is a government-induced pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a virus. The virus was nothing. Most of 99.95% of people are going to be just fine with it anyway, even if you get it.
Yeah.
You're going to have moderate symptoms at worst. So this was never a serious issue at the pandemic level. Ebola would be, you know, that would be. The Spanish flu was. But this is like
and there again, it goes back to suppressing information that allows people to make more informed decisions would have resulted in probably much different outcomes. And that's a big problem with the government controlling the information. And these doctors are, you know, obviously putting their livelihoods and their reputations on the line to give us that information. And if you can't make the rally, it is going to be taped, and it'll be available on our website after the rally. So definitely you want to check that out.
Have you heard from Studio 850? Are they going to be there? It's our local video cable or our local video service.
No, you know, unfortunately, I have reached out to our local media on several topics about, you know, the rally, about some of our candidates running, because Citizens for Medical Freedom has made a big push to engage our candidates and get their answers on, you know, medical freedom questions. Mm-hmm. And the local media has been noticeably absent and uninvolved. It seems they all have a candidate that they're supporting, and they don't want any part of something that's unbiased. And it's
disappointing. We're unbiased. We're biased incredibly. You know, the idea that the TV stations and the media have picked one candidate, that's incredibly biased. Well, we just had Dr. Joel Rudman on. And so he was on, he's from Navarre, he's got a family practice there. You know, he is Constitution down the line. I'm going to see if I can get him away from his stump speech next time he's on and say, look, dude, you know, let's go for the facts. And so that was interesting. But
well,
he's
check out the questionnaire he provided. We've posted the responses from all of our District 3 candidates running for the Florida House. He's one of them. Mm-hmm. We've shared their questionnaire answers.
Where is it available?
In all honesty, I haven't looked at them in detail, but he answered very, very emphatically on a lot of our questions. There was no gray area.
Yeah. That's what I got from him in talking to him. He's a really interesting guy. I mean, I support him. And if I remember, he's running against someone that has literally political signs everywhere. One, Maria Calkins, is also in the race, if I remember. Okay, so that's the same race. All right. So you have two folks running for the State House, and there was a post in one of our local Facebook pages that his signatures for the petitions to put him on the ballot all came from this district. Her signatures came from all over Florida.
More of them came from, I believe it's Polk County, than came from this area.
So why are they so interested? Yeah. So here's my colleague Maria Calkins. Come on the show and explain. Just tell us why. Tell us why you have more signatures in other counties than the district you're running from. Tell us why there are so many signs and so many people have endorsed you already. Open invitation, 215-383-3832. I'll contact her off the air, too, and see if we can get her on. But I'm curious. I'll send her the Joel Rudman interview. That should be interesting. But that's when I see that many street signs, I get concerned that there's too much money coming from who knows where. That's my thing. Yeah, go ahead.
I just think that all three candidates should be asked equally the tough questions. And, if you're not willing to answer those tough questions, that should be a red flag. So I feel like they all need to be given the platform and they need to be asked the questions. If they're not willing to step up to the platform, that's a problem.
Yeah, and that's something we can go over too. So if you want to go over the questions, I don't know if you have it ready, but certainly by next time, if you can, just have the questions, have some answers. Let's go over them. Let's go over each candidate. Let's make it public.
Okay.
Because it's a little hard to read. Yeah, it's a little hard to read because those are small questions on the Facebook page. But who else is running in the – okay, great. Who else is running in that race? We've got Joel Rubin. We've got Maria Calkins. There's two other Republicans.
And Skip Orth.
Right? Skip Orth is running. Yeah, he's been invited to the show. And who else? Is there one more person?
Those are the only three running for District 3.
Okay, and that's the state – that's the Florida State
Florida House. Yeah.
Florida House. Okay, there we go. Okay. And so are there any prominent Democrats – running for that seat that we know of yet?
Rebecca Jones is.
Isn't she running against Gates? She's running against Gates.
No, yeah. Okay. Who's the Democrat running in District 3?
This is live radio. She's asking her husband. I'm just teasing you. Live radio.
He's the other half of my brain.
We'll get him on the show. I hear him in the background.
Oh, he's saying there is no other candidate running in District.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so for the Florida State District, what is it? Two? One?
District 3.
District 3, okay. So Florida State House of Representatives, District 3, there are only Republican candidates running. So the primary is the most important election. The general, if the Republican runs unopposed, there is no general election. It's only the primary.
Right. Yeah. That's why we're really trying to encourage people to get involved in the primaries because it really is going to determine, the outcome.
Well, I grit my teeth, went to the election office, re-registered as a Republican just for this primary and midterm, and the day after the midterms in November, I'm going to go back to being independent because the gelding old party disgusts me, but I can't not have a vote in this primary because apparently the primary is going to be more important than the general, and that happens a lot of times too. Yeah. Do you guys have an endorsement that you want to make at this time?
No. And I think, as much as this process is benefiting us individually, personally, we'll certainly make our decision based on the information that we've gathered and continue to gather. We're not here to tell anyone how to vote. I am. I just want to get there's plenty of people to do that. I just, I know the type of voter I was up until, the 2000, really probably the 2020. I got a little involved for 2016, but definitely 2020. It's very time consuming to really get to know a candidate, and even then you certainly don't know them, but it's time consuming. So I was a voter that heard sound bites that sounded good, saw signs and kind of relied on the Republican Party to steer my vote. And that's how I voted. And what I've realized is that is not necessarily who I should be voting for. But it's so time consuming to put the work into getting the answers and engaging the candidates. And in all honesty, I had no expectation ever that I should think a candidate should answer my specific questions. That just wasn't something I expected or wanted. And boy, has my viewpoints changed. And I think sadly, I'm a representation of what a good part of voters are. That's how they vote.
You were. You were, but not now.
Yes.
Now you've had the great awakening. The light bulbs have gone off. Your eyes are open.
Yes.
You know, the sunshine is nice and clear, and you can see the path. You can see how these folks have used deception and money and a conditioning that, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats are it, that the Republicans are right-wing and the Democrats are left-wing, even though they occupy together a very narrow section of the political spectrum from tyranny to anarchy. They're a very small
yes.
part of it. Now, they're up on the tyranny side by quite a bit, but they're not where the founding fathers are. They're not, you know, if you take centrist, you take the, let's take your standard, you know, 12-inch ruler, 12 on the left being totalitarian, one on the right being being anarchist. Okay, so 12 is maximum control, you know, zero is like no control. I would put the Democrats and Republicans somewhere around the 9-10-inch mark on the left, you know, on their way to tyranny, tyranny being, you know, Castro, Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Pol Pot, you know, Chavez, those folks. Okay. And on the right, total anarchists would be Black Lives Matter and Antifa, which are used by the left to, you know, but centrist. There are very few people that are actually centrist. I can't think of anybody. The founding fathers would be around 3 inches, you know, so they'd be much closer to the anarchy side because they recognize the minimum laws necessary to protect you, your property, and your rights. That's what government's supposed to do. That's it. You know, so then you have centrists, which would be to the left of our founders, and then way to the left of our founders around the 9-10-inch mark, you know, is where I put the Democrats and Republicans. But if you think of only the Democrats and Republicans as the extent of political discourse and range of thought, and, you know, you folks are sadly mistaken.
Yeah.
They're not left and right wing. They are basically left wing and then more left wing, you know,
is
how I would describe it. Yeah.
So really, you know, our goal is to, and we're focused, narrowly focused on medical freedom as a group because that's obviously what we're fighting for. But what we're hoping to do is gather, you know, as much information as we can from these candidates about that topic and present it to, you know, the community and let them make more informed decisions. And my hope is that, you know, other groups focusing on other topics that have a passion like I have for medical freedom, have a passion in other areas that affect our community, will do the same thing. We'll, you know, ask the tough questions and make every effort possible to get that information to as many voters as they can so that we're making our own individual informed choice on a candidate. We're not relying on the Republican Party or the winning team or, you know, the flyer that you receive in the mail to make your decision. And I really hope that's a precedent that we can set, you know, going forward for choosing a candidate. It's just very time consuming and most people don't have that time. So it's going to be up to these groups that are representing these issues to do the legwork for them and present it unbiased.
Yep. Agreed. I'm just going to write down here. We got to figure out a time for you, so we may be changing our schedule a little bit. But just make a note to yourself then that the medical questionnaire, if you only give the questions, that's good. I'd love to have some answers, though, from any candidate. I'd love to talk about any candidate you might be supporting. Any candidate you're not hearing from, we need to know that too.
Absolutely.
And it's just as much an issue. In fact, it's probably more an issue if they refuse to answer. Then what are they hiding? You know, how can you call yourself accountable? How can you call yourself accountable to voters if you're not even going to answer a simple questionnaire on medical freedom? Yeah. So.
And we have some candidates that to date have refused to acknowledge it. And I
name them. Let's know who's
not
responded so far.
Yeah. I'm going to reach out to the group to inform the group and allow them to make efforts to communicate as well. And then, it's time to start naming names.
Okay, go ahead. Name names.
Well, right now, Linda Sanborn is one.
She's
running,
running for
school board.
Okay.
There's another one off the top of my head. I can't remember her name. But they're both school board candidates, and Boston is her last name, Carol Boston.
Okay.
And you know they both, especially Linda Sanborn, had some very questionable beliefs on COVID and was very supportive of some of the mandates going on with COVID for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So she really needs to engage us and let us know, you know, knowing what she knows now, where she stands on that issue. We've sent the questionnaire. I reached out by Facebook, and I've gotten no response. So I'm going to, you know, encourage group members to let them know. It's not just me. I'm not just one person asking these questions. I'm asking on behalf of a lot of their voters. And if their voters start asking the same question, it will let them know that not answering is not acceptable.
Not answering is answering.
Yeah.
Let's be blunt. Not answering is definitely answering. Yeah. Well, so as far as school board goes, yeah. In fact, if you want to invite her on the show to your report or just give me the contact and I'll invite her on as a general thing. Because anybody that we're talking about here on the show is more than welcome, is guaranteed. If we mention your name on the show, you are guaranteed time on the show to rebut, respond, talk to us. And do, you know, tell your story. And that's not a problem. 215-383-3832. And, of course, if you can reach me various places. I've got an email here, greg@writeyourlaws.com. You know, if you're a Facebook friend or, you know, or part of any of our groups, I'm not hard to get a hold of. And so I'm fair about this. But even people I like, you know, like Dr. Joel Rudman now, I put him through the ringer in many respects in terms of specifics. So I want to advise
candidates. Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you hear that interview by chance?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't. I definitely want to go back and listen to it. But I think
podcast.
It's even more important to ask the candidates that you think you support the tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another way I think we're going wrong in our selection process is our personal relationships are interfering with our ability to be objective.
Well, see, that's the thing with, because we know these folks, they're friends of ours or they're friends of friends. And
yeah.
So this is, and so if people are wondering again, why I'm doing something so specific to our local community here, trust me, this applies to your community. This applies to your city, your county, your state, all the things we talk about here. Problems are pretty universal, you know, and you'd be surprised how universal they are.
Oh, and I encourage, you know, if you get the questionnaires, if you happen to see them, take them and modify them to work in your area. You know, use your letterhead. It's a tool that I would love to be widely used because I do think it's a way for us as, you know, average citizens to kind of take back control of our election system.
You should put that on the questionnaire, a note to that effect. Please, if you're interested in this questionnaire or having your own questionnaire, you know, have some contact information. Put it right on there for folks, you know, especially non-candidates, you know, and other groups. Because there are other Citizens for Medical Freedom out there. There are other groups, and we need to, in fact, the more you can unite with other groups, you can bring them on the air, too. You know, if you find a group in Kansas or Nebraska or Wyoming or New Mexico that's doing what you're doing and say, hey, let's get together. Let's see if help. Let's form a bigger organization.
Well,
know,
and I think that was kind of our thought process when we started Citizens for Medical Freedom, because there are some very large organizations doing way beyond what we're doing, but they're on a national level or a regional level, and I think there's a lot to be said about your local group that represents your local community.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the goal of Citizens for Medical Freedom. We do have people, you know, from other parts, but it really was to put local faces and local experiences out there so that our neighbors, our friends and neighbors can relate to us. They can put a face with that name and build some trust. So I feel like if we can get all of the communities to do that same thing, you know, there's a lot of information and stuff that we can't do because we are so small. But I think there is a relationship you can build in your community if it's local. And that was the goal of Citizens for Medical Freedom.
No, it's perfect. It makes perfect sense. And, well, is it – we only have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to have to let you go a little bit early because I want to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. We've been so busy today, you know, between Joel. And next week's going to be a little bit different. We're going to have on Tuesday, we're going to have Dr. Peter Pryor is going to take the 8 to 9 o'clock slot. And then maybe the hour after that is going to be free. So I might start at 7. Mm. So we're thinking around changes. I'll be talking to you, and we'll announce if we get a new time for Cindy, we'll let you know that too. But the more that you can do locally, you know, because again, it applies all over the place. And if you can be a model for other organizations, you know, maybe post on some of the bigger sites. If you can get in contact with America's Frontline Doctors, for example, that would be a huge thing. So look, we're a local group. We'd like to tie into any networks you have. You know, keep us posted what you're doing. We'll tell you what we're doing. And this is networking is everything.
Yeah,
the show's one giant network. I mean, it really is. Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting us be a part of it.
Oh, are you kidding? I love having you on. This is great fun. You know, because you're so representative of a person that has gone through a massive change. You know, what you thought the world was is not what the world is.
Oh, and my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it started with my daughter, actually. I mean, really, my thought process about medical freedom is a 180 from where I was prior to our daughter. Our daughter's experience really opened my eyes and changed my viewpoint and my experience and my understanding and the reality of how important medical freedom is. I don't think it was
COVID
by accident.
Related or just
no,
like, you know,
it was
health problems,
you know, almost 14 years ago. It was you know, the birth of our child and the medical journey that we went on with her as a baby and a toddler. And it was a very rough journey medically. And really, I think medical freedom and thinking outside the box is really what saved her life and gave her a quality of life that she wouldn't have had. And that in itself had a profound impact on my thought process.
You know, it's amazing how often doctors underestimate the potential of lives out there. You know, people that say, well, you only have, you know, 6 months to live, and 10 years later, it's like, well, I heard this from this doctor, you know, 10 years ago, I had 6 months, and there they are, you know.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
It works the other way too. I mean, they're not, you know, but just because some doctor says that that this is the rest of your life, you know, you don't have to accept it. There are people that, it's like the first parents that took Down syndrome babies and said, this is a viable person. This is a person with a personality. This is a person with a soul. This is part of our family. What do you mean you want to take them away or put them someplace or abort them or things like that?
Shove them in a corner. Yeah.
These are wonderful people. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, but some parent had to start that.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be the first. You know, and the same thing goes with medical freedom. Someone had to be the first to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. You know, and so for just in closing, because we do have to go, for all the folks that say, I'm only one person, I got news for you. We're all only one person.
Yes, and together we can affect change that can't be stopped.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we do here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get your contact information. I'll let you go, and thank you very much for calling in a day early. I'll be sure to post it in our notes.
That's okay. I appreciated it.
Greg,
it was an hour later. It's Citizens, the number 4, Medical Freedom. You can find us on Facebook, Telegram, Gab, and also check out our website. I really do think it's amazing, the information you can get. It's Citizens, the number 4, MedicalFreedom.com.
Sounds good. Hey, listen, we'll talk to you next week, and like I said, we're going to change your schedule. We'll announce that and let folks know where to find you. But, of course, we always have podcasts, and so make sure that you listen to the podcast in your vehicle if you want. Just connect your cell phone to your audio. There we are. Or just turn up your cell phone. You can listen that way.
Sounds
cars
good.
Are bright enough now. Yep.
And look forward to seeing you on Friday.
That's right. I forgot. I'm going to be speaking, too. So I'll be one of those local speakers.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I got 2 minutes, which I'll probably take 3, but, you know, I'll don't tell Dr. B I said that.
Yeah, no, I won't.
Okay.
Y'all have a great week.
Thanks, Cindy.
All right, bye.
There we go. Goodbye now. All right, let me place here. It seems appropriate as we are defying government to, in fact, we have a government that basically is a coup. Everything they're doing is illegal, and they're going to say that everything we're doing is illegal if we don't follow them, but you can't, there's no requirement to follow an illegal government. And so let's play the Sedition Act of 1798, SRV. This is the 11th of 31 videos I made and recordings I made on this particular topic. Let's get to this, and then we'll close out, and we'll do it again tomorrow. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government, formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch, bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States, or anyone in it, is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts, under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. I'm going to hold it up right now just because we have to go. We're actually over time, so I will do morning at 6 o'clock Central Time. Talk to you then.